And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Feared because we kind of have an understanding of what the future is going to bring, and it's going to be cool, very, very, very cool, very cool. This last weekend was nice. Donna and I celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary yesterday, so we took off the whole weekend. We were like bumps on a log and did and went and stuff what we wanted to do, and it was cool. Very, very, very cool. We'll talk about that later. But I tell you, what marked it, you know, we have Made Safe Nick Lambert on, partner with David Irvine. He said, "Hey man, don't mess with the boy's flow, man. He's there doing his coding stuff and getting kind of where." We'll talk to Nick. Now I met Nick at the New York Bitcoin Conference along with David Irvine. So it's like, you know, same. We got, you know, another good perspective. Come on, we had David on a couple of times. Been communicating with us. It's time for Nick to chime in and give his perspective. It's going to be awesome. But you know, well, I got to give you what marked the dates on here. Yesterday was the launch of OuterNet, okay? Now, it's going to be, yeah, it's just a demonstration of code, okay? Here we have these little satellites. We just put them up, and we have communication of we can't. You know, and it's not on DARPA, the man's grid. It's like, you want to transfer little ones and zeros, used. Oh, and ooh, in Bitcoin. Ooh, it's just a capacity. What was the other thing? We've been screaming for years, Iridium. The Iridium constellation, come to find out, Michael Kilsky, our attorney and server guy and longtime friend, anarcho-capitalist, libertarian activist for 20 years, his 22-year-old son works for Iridium. He goes, yeah, they're talking about putting up more satellites. And I'm like, really? Which allows for worldwide text messaging. I'm on the South Pole, and I go, you know what? I feel like sending me a text, okay? So, and I think it's free, too. You just buy the hardware. This is an awesome time. It's decentralized to the point where it gets to distributed. Distributed internet, distributed communication, distributed to every little bitty, itty-bitty person can do it. That was the concept. That's what we're doing. That's what we're looking forward to with Made Safe. Made Safe, they did a fundraising effort in April 22nd. Now, in the first month, we're going to give bonuses of and discounts of, and you do a Bitcoin for, and you get this many, and we're going to do it. And then the second month, well, then the third month, we'll kind of see if we get the fund at 5 hours. 5 hours over $7 million, 5 hours, boom, shakalaka, done. And everybody went, you know what? I think there's a market for this anonymous, encrypted, distributed, everybody gets to internet thing. That's what I think, you know? I don't know. What do you think, Nick? You think the world wants this, ready for it, and looking forward to it?
Yeah, I certainly hope so, Ernie. I think it's it demonstrates there's a market pool for what we are doing as opposed to us kind of forcing it onto the market. So, yeah, certainly signs are really, really good that people really want this.
Well, and, I'm sorry.
Quickly say just congratulations on your wedding anniversary as well.
Thank you. 30 years, I did something right. I have a really good chain. Okay. What I want to ask you is, when you went to New York, and you guys have been working on this for years, okay? And you went to New York, and what you talked about before, I don't think people really understood, one, what it was, and two, that was even possible. When Bitcoin really started taking off, or at least the understanding of cryptography and how private you can be in communication, distributed, no central point of failure kind of thing, that kind of opened people's eyes to go, oh, we see what you're doing. It's kind of like a Bitcoin for the internet. Now, when you got to New York, did that kind of surprise you, the acceptance of what you were doing, or were you expecting more? What was your feeling then?
Yeah, I think probably we were overwhelmed in New York, and it's we talk about it a bit in the office. It's quite funny, even in kind of Scotland or in the UK, or even in the local town of Troon where we were based, nobody really knows what MadeSafe does or MadeSafe is, and nobody really seems to care. So it's quite strange when we got to New York, and we had a quiet couple of days before the conference, and then we got to the conference and people were all over us kind of saying, oh, you guys are from MadeSafe, what do you do? So that was a real eye-opener for us.
Well, I mean, see, the only thing that surprises me the most is that you were surprised. You know, I'm going, wow, this, because you know my excitement from the beginning. When I heard what you were doing and why and how, it was, especially with my experience as an activist and the people that we know and stuff, I'm going, this is it. This is what I've been waiting my whole freaking adult activist since the late 80s life. In fact, I thought the internet was going to go this way. In the early days as an activist, when we first started getting our email accounts in the early 90s and so on, we're going, oh, because you dial up to a BBS, you'd upload, download, and it was kind of, you know, we were the internet. And then here came the World Wide Web. I mean, did David, you know, understand that it's kind of going off the rails? It went down the dark side. Did he always want to do this? And when did you come in? Let's hear, how you got sold on the mission.
Yeah, I think David is well and truly into the dark side, and I think this is exactly what he envisaged. And I mean, and the values of privacy, security, freedom that we have are ones that David can really holds very dear. So I think he fully understands the implications of what we're doing. And I think that, as you talked about in the first point, Ernie, that because it's a Bitcoin conference that we did the announcement at, and those people are very knowledgeable about decentralization and its impact, I think that people there understood the significance of what we're trying to do. And I think that only by understanding decentralization can you really get what we're trying to do, because otherwise it just gets lost in a load of jargon just now, I think. So, and my own involvement, I actually worked for a digital marketing agency, and one day this guy just phoned up and said, he introduced himself and said, I'm looking actually for a free website. And I was like, oh, that's very interesting. You and probably half the world are looking for a free website. But he started to explain what the product was, and, you know, I agreed to go out and meet him. And so I went out to chat with David, and probably at the first hour of that meeting, I had no idea what he was talking about. And then it started to kind of sink in and click. And it became apparent to me that he kind of started to get goosebumps when he started to talk about the technology and the implications for it. And really, I've been kind of hooked on it ever since. So that was about 5 years ago. And I've been employed directly by MadeSafe for just about 2.5 now.
Now, you started, you know, your work in life, project management, you know, with IBM and Send Me a SCI before a change in tech led you into senior marketing positions. Now, the marketing positions, is that why he hired you? I mean, you know, being a project manager and marketing, it seemed like two skills that would be of use to MadeSafe. Which one, you know, are you using the most of now?
Well, I think he hired me because I was the only one stupid enough to hang around. And I couldn't get out the door fast enough when all the other guys were much faster and fitter than me. So that's how he got left with me. But I think it's a bit of both, Ernie. I think probably the project management side, I think, is probably handled pretty well within the developer group, the engineers that we have. And we're continually tweaking and making changes there. But I think probably the marketing is probably the most used of my kind of experience to this point within the company.
We're going into the first break. See, are you interested? Yeah. We're getting all nitty gritty when we come back. You know, what MadeSafe really is at its core. You know, what it offers. Why all of a sudden 5 hours, boom shakalaka, their 3-month funding campaign was done. You know, I know why. I was telling David, man, I'm going, this is going to go faster than you think.
Did you agree? Did you totally agree? I'll bet that you did. But did you read the agreement? There are 7 billion people on Earth, and there are over 6 billion active cell phone accounts right now. And every one of them came with an agreement. Billions have already agreed to allow entities that they do not know to use and abuse every feature of their mobile devices. Your computer activity is monitored and archived. Your car is tracked, and even your face is scanned. The current power structure grows more fearful every day of your desire for anonymity, independence, free association, freedom of movement, freedom of expression, and your freedom of thought. And entire categories of humans will be targeted. And if they, them, those that won't leave us alone determine that we are not within their control, then we will be categorized as out of control. FreedomsPhoenix.com will launch the next phase of the Levolution by the end of the summer of 2014. And if you have to tell your neighbors about it, then we did it wrong. Yeah, that's one thing. We're pimping our new newspaper thing that we're doing. And it's going to be done in a different way to where it's kind of like our magazine, but it's a template that's online that people can take complete template, add their local whatever, and then send it out. It'll be interactive with QR codes with your smartphone as you're reading the paper and, you know, doing videos and going to sites. And it's going to be cool. Very, very, very cool. But, you know, I've been kind of holding off. We accumulating, getting it ready. I could have done it earlier. I've been holding off because in the first edition, I want to get details on MadeSafe. I need some artwork. I need to get, you know, so I'm going to be bugging the crap out of you guys here over the next week. So the thing is that, you know, it's part of this. It's really good timing because when we did the Spaceship One Government Zero thing back in the summer of 2004, it was with the full understanding. This was probably at least a year, year and a half, yeah, just about a year before we started beta on Freedom's Phoenix. And it was a bunch of us seasoned activists. I'm 53. So a lot of these younger guys that, you know, we help and work with and so on, they just don't have the life experience of just seeing the cycle of the man. I mean, you know, they just, I go, oh, I've been through this before, you know. And when the New York Bitcoin thing happened with, you know, the New York Department of Financial, we rule you guys. And I go, when they did that, I'm like, well, duh, what'd you think was going to happen? So today we're launching, there's a group called Tragedy and Hope, tragedyandhope.com. It's a gentleman named Richard Grove that was a SEC whistleblower on some software, long story, New York Wall Street stuff. And very intelligent guy, reads hundreds of books kind of thing. And he came across, he's like, wow, it's that bad? Yes, it's that bad. Well, then he started chronicling, you know, the history of and bringing a lot of this stuff. They would say conspiracy theories, but then he's like, I didn't make this up, man. You know, it's a book. So a lot of these Bitcoin guys are big supporters of him. Well, we're launching a Bitcoin fundraiser starting today. And it's going to, and what happens, you know, I'm sure it'll be successful, but it brings attention to all the reasons why you need Bitcoin, distributed, you know, financial services, distributed internet, all this stuff. So we're going to find out if Bitcoin can truly be dark, if it can be anonymous, if it can be secure. They're doing offline wallets. They're making sure all that's secure. All the big guys are making sure he's set up. Then we're going to start emphasizing, you know, like either dark wallet or something like it using Cody's stuff. But MadeSafe keeps coming up because with MadeSafe, a whole bunch of the other stuff doesn't matter, you know? I understand. So now we're going to get into the details of how far you are along. All right, here we go.
LRN.FM.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Back to the future. See, 20 years ago, I thought this is where we were going to be. You know, I mean, you know, 10 years later, I thought this was it. I thought this is how PGP encryption was coming around. The Clinton administration's freaking out on, you know, Phil Zimmerman doing, you're not allowed to be secret. So what do a bunch of activists do? They get PGP on their emails, and they were, you know, encrypted biscuit recipes. I mean, like, all right, fine, you guys will do some work here, and here's my grandma's biscuit recipe. I mean, you know, this is, you know, so now we're getting to where it's going to be the communication, the internet is going to be secret, because I understood for the first time in human history, the king was inside the head of all the serfs, okay? And you'd see your children growing up, oh, it's MySpace in, I don't know, like 2003 or something like that, mid-2000s. All of a sudden, you got MySpace. Here's my favorite color, favorite band, favorite phrase, favorite, you know, my friends and photos. Oh, and here comes Facebook. Oh, man, if that isn't a surveillance dream, you know? So what happens when the entire plant or anybody using MadeSafe, it goes dark? They're, oh, ooh, the man don't like, hell no. Hell, how would Amazon know what to sell you? So this is where we're going. I want to ask Nick Lambert, Chief Operating Officer for MadeSafe. You know, are you satisfied with where you're at? I mean, how are you guys doing on development? We got a launch year that's coming, or, you know, what's happening?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we're still looking at, I think we're still hoping or anticipating Q4 this year. We're still leaving it fairly vague because, as you know, when you're trying to do something that's never been done before, it's very hard to predict how long things take. You'd almost need to guess, you know, you need to make lots of assumptions and guesses. So I think what we did, Ernie, about 4 weeks ago now, we got the Testnet 1 up and running, which is the first of the external networks. So this is, as far as we are aware, the first in the world of a serverless network that's autonomous that you can authenticate yourself onto. So that network has been up and running for 4 weeks. And it's something that the developers take up and take down, run tests on, improve, etc. But it's really encouraging because it just demonstrates to us what we knew already. But maybe more importantly, tells the world that all the kind of mad ideas that David and the guys have come up with, when they're all put together, they actually work. So from that perspective, it's wonderful. And then from there, we move into two other test networks before we launch the beta, as I say, hopefully in Q4, probably towards the end of that time period.
Okay, so I get a Christmas present.
Yeah, I mean, we're Scottish and we're tight, so that'll be the only present you get from us, Ernie. No, I'm only joking.
Well, at least it's not a lump of coal. Okay, so what I want to you know, have you do is define your pitch, and, you know, Mr. Marketing Guy. Okay, go ahead and give us your pitch as you're going, you know, fresh into some. I mean, you know, your venture capitalist was everybody. They, you know, you want to have this distributed kind of everybody network thing, and everybody said, you know, here's my little bit, and everybody showed how much everybody wants it, and here's my money. Okay, so, you know, here you're going, but when you're going into someone cold and they say, all right, come explain it to us, or you're talking to a reporter, or you've been getting a lot of press and so on, you go in there, how do you describe it? I mean, it's easier now that you have things that are distributed, like, you know, Bitcoin or something. But I mean, you started doing this years before Bitcoin. So I'm just going, give me your best sales pitch on what it is that you're creating. Try to explain it to grandma.
Yeah, well, you're putting me on the spot now. But I think, I mean, before we definitely struggled. So now what I would say to someone is, what we are doing is we are re-implementing the internet the way it was supposed to be. So when back when ARPANET and you know, all these guys in the early 60s, this is the way that the internet was supposed to be. It was not supposed to have all these intermediaries or servers or places where eavesdroppers and big tech companies could go to mine and look after what you're doing. We are creating a totally free, decentralized, private and secure internet is really what we're doing. And as a way of explaining it, and we talked a bit at the start, Ernie, about how Bitcoin's really kind of galvanized our ability to explain decentralization. You know, it has done it for us effectively. So one of the kind of lines that we've gone back to a few times is that in the same way that, you know, Bitcoin has removed financial institutions and banks from trade, we're removing intermediaries and servers from data. So we're doing for data what Bitcoin does for trade.
Well, define that. I mean, data means like, let me think, like everything.
It does. It means everything. So it's so the safe network that we're building is a full data and communications network. So that is any type of data, structured, unstructured. It's voice. It's email. It's text. It's, you know, it's just everything that you can do on the internet today will run on this network. So you're right. Data is everything.
Well, I mean, that's not very ambitious. No.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you know, now let me, I got to ask this. Has there been attempts at sabotage? I mean, I look at this and I'm going, this is so powerful. I cannot imagine this goes unscathed. It's just that I don't know how they would stop it. I mean, other than Hellfire missiles. But I mean, you know, I'm wondering, are you guys feel secure? You left alone enough, or you kind of, you know, you got your own armed guards or what?
No, well, we don't. And when you hear people talk about it, you start to think maybe we should. But I think that, I mean, part of the process in the UK, when there's a lot of new technologies and you know, patents and things are there, that, you know, a lot of these applications are run through certainly the UK government. So, yeah, I think they would probably be aware of us at some level. But it's hard to know when you're sitting in an office for the most part in Scotland, you know, Ernie, what's really going on out there. And I think that it's really hard to know if people are seeing us as, you know, that term of, you know, a Bitcoin 2.0, or are we seen as just another Bitcoin 2.0 company? Or are people really seeing what the capability of the network is?
No, I see exactly what's going on. Don't ever think the bad guys don't have somebody out there going, what? You know, they're just takes them time to get a committee stroke dash blue ribbon panel to decide on the next meeting they're going to have, the whatever made safe on the agenda. Okay, so, and right up there with Bitcoin. See, the thing is we're trying to see if, you know, can Bitcoin be what they promised it was going to be. Yeah, we're going to see, you know, but I can see Made Safe is even more fundamental than Bitcoin. It's not just ones and zeros of what I want to do. It's ones and zeros of everything I do. You know, I can see fundamentally, it's like, you know, if they never even read or understand the communication of the address I sent to the kind of what they don't know from the beginning. Explain how it works. I mean, you know, when we come back in the next segment, I mean, it's actually, you know, the concept of farming instead of mining. Why that? The concept is, where is the data held? How is it accessed? Where is it distributed? And can you use things other than the internet as it sits now? Because everything's on the backbone of some government or corporation laid a line, and it's ours now, you know? Well, ones and zeros don't give a crap. You know, we have our own freaking satellite constellation of CubeSat smartphone with a solar panel on it in orbit. I did in one day. Oh, don't think so? Already happened! What do you think SpaceX is for? Oh! Here we come!
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Okay, Nick, we can get some technical stuff when we come back, exactly how this is going to go. Because I was talking to David Johnston from BitAngels, has been on a couple of times in the last month, you know, because we're talking. I've been, last couple of weeks, if you look at my archive, I mean, it's been a lot of Bitcoin stuff. You know, after they did this New York thing, I'm like, all right, come on, everybody, this is neon freaking I told you so or what? So I'm just going, this is, explain to me, now we're going to decide whether it's going to be private and secure or not. Because we've had, you know, some Bitcoin wallets by people that were, you would think, would know better, and they lost stuff. And if they don't know, well, freaking I sure as hell ain't going to know, you know? So I'm going, look, okay, we need to make sure that this step one, just download this wallet. Step two, get this. Step three, it's done. Step four, they took all your money. Thanks for playing. Okay. So yeah. I'm going, we need to, you know, be way more ready for mate. Okay. Let me tell you what's going on. We moved all our servers about a week ago, okay? We did in anticipation of more features, and I have a Uber developer, geeky, you know, one of you guys, okay, that has taken it on to be able to put Freedom's Phoenix on the MadeSafe network, okay? So we're getting, I don't know, what did you call it, APIs of the so on, you know, all that geek stuff. So what he's doing is setting it up so that when MadeSafe goes, not only are we farming, but we're putting a flag on the beachhead of here's Freedom's Phoenix, one of the reasons why you need to get this and you get to have and use and the features of, and here we are, okay? Now, there's other organizations like you know, Precious Metals Dealer that we work with also wants to do the same thing. And you can buy gold over here with, you know, oh, and there might be an interface with SafeCoin and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So the other thing is that I need your guys' help as I have the MasterCoin or the SafeCoin or whatever the original that we did. I need to take that offline and, you know, break it up into 10,000 increments or something of offline wallets and make sure, because I don't want to be a bad example and all of a sudden, and it's gone now. Okay.
Yep.
So we need to go ahead and work on that pretty soon, too, and how that's, you know, so when David's available for that. So when we do all this and we get ready, you know, we'll make sure we launch this thing, be real, here we go. But I want to explain to the audience how it is they would participate, what they're downloading, what their computer would be doing, how it will look on their computer, will it run in the background, how much electricity, I mean, blah, 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 okay? So let's go on how the rollout, the plan is.
Great.
All right, you hip to that?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, 15 seconds.
Great.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Let me tell you one way you do that. Let me tell you how you do that. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. That's how you declare your independence. It goes like this. Are you ready? You ready? Here it goes. It goes, I declare my independence. See how easy it was? No government form! And that's what MadeSafe is. You want to declare your independence of, you know, surveilled kind of whatever you don't want and kind of leave me alone-ism. You know, I'm just going to download MadeSafe, really. Are you going to do that? How's that? Is it like opening an app on the Play Store? I don't know. We're going to ask Nick. Nick Lambert, Chief Operating Officer, MadeSafe. Some marketing skills he has brought with him. And I'm asking you, Nick, okay, so when I do this, I'm going, all right, I'm in, man. And then what?
All right. So, yeah. So you will download the Safe Network software. So I don't know exactly where that will be from yet, but you will download software like we all do today. And once you download this software, you will effectively then create your credentials. So you'll just create an ID in the way that you do when you open up any new service today. But the difference that when you create credentials in the Safe Network, you'll be creating them and only you will know what they are, you and the network, and no intermediary, no middleman. So you'll download the software, you'll set up your ID, you'll set up your password, and once you've inputted those and you're up and running, then at that point you will have, I would imagine, a window that would sit maybe at the side of your taskbar and applications that sit on top of the Safe Network. So those could be decentralized exchanges. It could be file storage. It could be a web browser. Will all then sit inside that window. So as soon as your computer boots up, you will just launch the Safe Network, and then everything within that screen will be private, secure, anonymous, encrypted, etc. And that's really it. It's a very low barrier to entry, very easy for people to use, and it's been designed that way. A big thing for David was that the tools that allow anonymity and security and things online exist today, but the problem is you need to have probably some kind of master's degree in computing science, and you need to use, you know, bits from five different companies to get it all working. So the big thing that we're trying to do here is make it usable for the average garden variety user, and that's really what the safe network is.
Grandma! Grandma's just button. See, this is what I've been screaming. All right, my audience, this is why I was going, where's my just button? Because whenever I talk to all you geeks, they go like this. They say, well, you just this and you just that. You know, you just do the just. And every time they say, I go, all right, show me that just. I want to say, show me your just button, okay? Well, then there's like, they start typing. I go, whoa. You're already up to 473 keystrokes. That's your just button? Seriously? You know? So Made Safe is going to be Ernie's just button. Damn it. I'm like, you know, I'm going to get that. I'm going to make a just. Somebody make me a just button. I'm going to make a just button. Made Safe. The just button for the internet. Seriously. You think I'm kidding. Okay. So this is one thing that the incentive for running it, aside from the certain big incentive of, you know, I'm private and it's mine and bite me, you know, there's also a financial or I can't even say if it's financial. There's some incentive for me to put it on there and make part, because how the network, you know, explain how your hard drive and your bandwidth becomes part of the network. Explain that part.
Yeah, so we have an incentivization, I'll call it a network token for sake of argument, called SafeCoin, and it's there to incentivize really kind of three different types of people on the network. So the first one that we're talking about here is end users. So why should you or I, Ernie, go and give our hard drive space and bandwidth and computing resources to this network? I really need to have a reason to do that. So what they will do is when they turn on the computer and they set up their account, they will then, through our user interface, decide how much storage space they want to give to the network. So we mostly, I have a 500 gig hard drive in my laptop, which is probably quite small by modern standards. But maybe let's say I want to give 100 gig of that to the network. So I'll go and tell the network that just through a simple user interface. And then I'll be technically at that point farming on the network. And the reason we use the term farming, it's very akin to Bitcoin mining, except with Bitcoin mining, there's a lot of wasted resource because the computers are solving difficult computational problems, really just to prove, to prove they're providing this, they're providing services to the network. And there's a lot of stories actually coming out on Twitter today to show how much waste is being caused by, you know, these kind of mining farms and things like that out in China. So we're using the term farming because there's absolutely no waste here. On our network, people are providing resource and that resource is being used and there's no waste involved at all. So people who farm in the network will be automatically allocated these safe coins by the network as data is retrieved from their computer. So there's a clear incentive there for people to provide their resource.
Okay, now this is one thing that we're setting up here, we're thinking about, and we're all talking, and we go, and I even went and looked at the forum a little bit, and kind of I'm like, more geek stuff. Okay, so I go like this, I say, I want to participate. I am looking within 10 feet of me. I got like 8-9 computers. I mean, I'm computered up. I got a good, you know, I pay extra for bandwidth so that I don't have to worry about, you know, a lot of stuff that we do with the, you know, signals to the network. And I got like 3 different networks that were cutting out all the kind of, I mean, damn. All right. So I need bandwidth. But that's for 3 hours of the day. And even then, I still got more than I need. So I probably got download of at least 80 megabytes per second, 20 upload. I'm going, that would probably be nice for some people if I'm using me as a node or part of the Made Safe network. So when I have the ability, I'll just go and, you know, get a hard drive, extra hard drive for freaking every one of the computers. I don't give a crap, you know. So I go buy, you know, I spend, I don't know, $500 on a bunch of hard drives, put them in there, and I say, allocate each one of these computers. Leave them on! Leave them on! Let's go make me some SafeCoin, okay? So I put that out there. They start using my, because I had experiences with this before. It was called Napster and LimeWire and all this, as you were using resources of your computer to serve music up to people.
Okay, I remember this. And it just, man, it ate up all of my goodie on my computer because I didn't have, I don't think there was a setting to limit how much or bandwidth or how much hard drive. So you guys set that up to where, okay, we can only do this much. If it's starting to affect your processing or some your need to computer, you can turn it off. You can do this. You can set it. So I put that up there, and I'm getting SafeCoin not as kind of a random, I did a number and spent all these electrons. And I asked Blake Anderson, Uber Geek guy in Bitcoin, and Cody Wilson, and Will Pangman. I'm going, look, Andreas Antonopoulos and Tony Snow, and I mean, it goes on and on and on. I'm like, why are you doing all this? What purpose is it? They say the best answer I've gotten is the price you pay for the security of Bitcoin. It's the price you pay. That's how they do it. How is Made Safe different? Why is it that, I can get reward? I assume I'm getting rewarded for every one and zero that's going out. I'm getting something, a portion of something in return for that, which winds up being a token. So what's the difference? Why is it, one's, just burning electrons and one's not? Why?
I think it's probably fundamentally, and this is going to get probably inching towards kind of geeky stuff here, but I think it's because the way the network has been designed. So there's nothing in what we're doing that's been done before. So the network is really aware of what else is happening on the network. So it is able to determine extremely quickly whether nodes are providing resource. So you might commit resource, Ernie, to the network, but you also need to provide it. So you get people tricking us otherwise, saying, well, I'm going to give you 100 gig, but in actual fact, they store a load of data and just turn their machine off. So I think the network is different from anything else that exists because the network is able to tell the state of a node or the state of a piece of data within 20 milliseconds of it changing. So it's able to determine very, very quickly what's happening. I think that's probably one of the big differences between that and maybe the Bitcoin network, which is maybe not able to tell things quite as quickly as that and works very much on consensus.
We're looking forward to it. We'll be right back. Okay, this is that's good stuff. When we come back, we got one more segment, and what I want to do is make sure that we are letting people know what kind of hardware they might need. Okay, what kind of bandwidth? I mean, they doing it on dial-up? I guess they could, but maybe not. So this is the other thing is the future of other abilities to send ones and zeros. I mean, is somebody that has a HughesNet dish, I mean, are they able to do it? Are we having? So I'm just, it's all about how fast and how well you can provide ones and zeros, but I'm wondering the fetching of it, because some services they'll use, I remember how satellite used to be, I don't know how it is now, but it used to be use your phone line to request something, and then the satellite, download to get it, that kind of stuff. So I'm wondering how robust this is in the ability to communicate, where, what kind of system do you got to have? What kind of processor? What kind of, because that's the thing I was asking David Johnston over at BitAngels. I'm going, are you going to be doing this? He's, yep. I'm setting them up. I already bought my hard drive. I'm doing kind of, I go, good. Tell me what I need. Then he goes, well, I don't know. So yeah. I'm just going, I need to know what I need. I mean, what I got here and I described, I'm good. I got the Vista over there, an XP over there, a Windows 7 over there, a couple of Linux things I'm doing. I got. When I keep trying to do Linux, and it took me 5 hours. I said, all right, today's the day. You're going to do it. 5 hours of just buttons, okay? And I'm going, you guys, you're killing me. And I tried to make it to where it was easy. Then we find out that Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard conspired together to make sure you couldn't dual boot, to make sure you couldn't. I mean, there's some, then I build a new video computer here to do the stream. I kind of isolate. I have a video streaming one. I have an audio one. I have this. And when I needed to redo my video one, it crashed. I get, and all of a sudden, I got a sign I totally agreed to even use the motherboard that was Motorola Google. They go, oh, I'm sorry, to even turn on this motherboard. It was a great motherboard. Isn't it great? You like that? Good. It's ours now, And I go, holy crap. And a lot of people, they just, yeah, I agree. They have no idea what they're agreeing to. And I'm going, and neither do I. And I don't want to, am I going to be able to load up Made Safe And I know what I'm agreeing to, or it doesn't matter, or they don't see anything. See, and all this information is supposed to be so secret. Is it secret even to you guys?
Yep.
You know, so this is the kind of stuff that we want to talk about.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Hardware. Okay, I'm gonna go get whatever I gotta go get. I'm gonna go get it like today. You know, because Nick said. Okay.
All right.
So, man, you feel me? I just want to make sure that you know
that should be some kind of deal with Best Buy where I get to recommend their computers to you.
Yep. See, there should be made safe, you know, compliant or made safe optimized or made safe. See, I see. Are you guys seeing that this is what's coming? I mean, do you guys really understand the global monument? I mean, because I'm sure you got developers around the world. That's one other thing we might want to talk about, too, because this is not just out of Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe out of Scotland.
Yeah, and it's hard for us. I mean, it still feels grassroots to me, and it's, you know, and actually we were on the Max Kaiser show is actually airing today and later in the week, so we are starting to get out there, but it still feels quite grassroots, even though we're getting into some bigger press now, but I don't know, you're stuck here.
Good.
It's hard to tell.
Good. All right, here we go.
Go.
Help get LRN.FM into more ears. Visit promote.lrn.fm for a free bumper sticker, flyers, banners, graphics, and more. Promote.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From your lies, 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 your lies. Stop lying to me. You know what? If I don't have to pay attention, you don't see what I'm doing. I can do whatever, and I don't even know you're lying. Doesn't matter. You know, because I get to, you know, do whatever I want and privately and what I want because I can. All right? But to start off with that, when they did their, you know, first hours of fundraising and boom, shakalaka, we're done, you know, I'm going, and damn, you know, lucky you got some. Now, the thing is that, you know, this meant that they had funding for what? I mean, you needed the money, you know, for I don't know, I guess paying rent and stuff and, you know, doing develop. But a lot of the work, I guess, MadeSafe itself, the core kernel kind of it was already kind of done. You know, I mean, how much of that was done? Now you're doing applications on top of it. And let me tell you, you know, the kind of it's like having I mean, I hate to do in comparison like this, but let's say you created Android. OK, all of a sudden, boom, here pops up Android, a platform for now. We got gazillion apps on that or, you know, Apple's operating system. And you go, all right, what do we have? You know, well, I don't know. We got a platform to put a whole bunch of stuff on. Well, this is where, you know, a lot of development is going in. What happens when you have encrypted, unlimited, I get to put up whatever storage on the MadeSafe protocol? What does that mean? That means that Freedom's Phoenix gets to set up its own video service. That means I get to upload any and everything I want. Unlimited storage of anything. It goes up. It's on the network. Little pieces of everything I do goes on parts of everybody's hard drive that is available to anybody that wants it. And if somebody shuts down, it's all right. It was replicated over here so many times, kind of, you know, it's there. What does that mean? That means governments can't take it down. That means, see, that's one thing about MadeSafe I don't think people appreciate as much as an activist does, is that when you put stuff up, a lot of times it's not that, you know, it's not popular, it's that it's too popular and they don't like it, okay? So that is the one thing. Let's talk about the first round of money that you got went to the developing of what? What is it that you still had to do, Nick?
Yeah, so where we'd taken, I mean, the company's been really, the technology had been getting developed for about 8 years and 2 months before the crowd sale. So, as you say, a lot of the development work had been done, but what we've done since then, so what the money's going to is it's going to, obviously, as you rightly said, pay rent and pay developers and pay the staff here. But once that the network's up and running, and so what we're doing is combining these separate components. So there's maybe about 8 or 9 that make up the network. So what we've been doing since then, using the money to pay guys to bring these components together to really make up the network. And then that will obviously, that process will take until Q4, as we said, when the network goes into beta. But thereafter, the network can never stop. So it's not like you get to a day where you say, it's done, I can go and sleep now and have a beer or whatever. The network needs to be maintained, and people will want additional features added, different things that they want the network to be able to do. And that's where our attentions will turn. I think also what we've been using the money to do is to set up these developer pods. So we've talked about this a bit, and I'm not sure people always realize what we mean by it. So we are trying to decentralize the knowledge of MadeSafe and of the network and the ability of developers to help the network, fix bugs, add features, etc. So if we left everything here in Truin, that would be a central point of weakness. Which would be a kind of daft thing to do when we've invented this decentralized technology. So we are setting up these development pods, and we currently have two underway. We have one in San Francisco, which Paige Peterson is doing a great job of running for us. And we have one just started in Montreal, a guy by the name of Francis Brunel's doing that one. And then we also have one coming on stream, we think, in September, a guy called Paul Dalton starting one in Washington, D.C. So these pods will, in time, be a collection of people that know how to how the underlying code of the network works and can make fixes to it. So that's where we're also using the money to do that as well. And as I say, pay the staff's wages to maintain the code for probably about another 2 years is our best guess right now.
How is it, you know, that's one of the big questions I had about Bitcoin. I'm going, oh, the core team this and the core team that, and who's this core team? I mean, you know, how do you approve changes in something that's so supposed to be so secret? You know, I'm wondering, you know, I know all the geek, oh, well, you just open source, oh, you just look, and oh, you just. I'm like, yeah, I like all this just word. Okay, how is that done?
Yeah, I mean, and to be upfront as well, I'm not a coder or anything like that, Ernie. So Simon, you're kind of both. I can understand where you're coming from. So all these libraries are in our code repository, which is GitHub, which is just a place where the guys keep all the code, and all the tests are there, and people can tell what's passing, what's not passing, maybe where problems exist, and they can go in and make a pull request and say, right, mate, say, if I want to have a look at this, can I pull down this code? And they will then work on the code if they think they understand it enough to make a change and an improvement. And they then send that back to us. And our guys here will look at what's been done, run some tests on it. If they're satisfied, it's going to make what we have better, they will accept it. And it will come into the core code base, and then it'll be part of the network. So
yeah,
that's how
well,
that
who's
works.
That guy that accepts it? See, that's what I need to know. You know, is it David sitting on his throne going, I therefore say we can? I mean, you know, I mean, it's going to be somebody.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not been that many things like that that have come in. So, you know, because the code is complex and because we're still going through that educational phase, we've not had a lot of commits or improvements in code back to us yet, but there's been a couple of minor things that have come in. And a lot of the time there are guys in our development team who are specialists in certain areas, and there are people that, like David, that really just know the whole system like the back of his hand. So I think in time that will become a process where a number of different people can approve it, and the system's set up in such a way that they'll know whether the code is an improvement or not.
Okay, you know, well, you know, proof is in the, you know, it works, you know, so
you'll
this
have
is
to trust me.
Oh, yay! Oh, that's what I'm looking for, you know. This is, you know, we're going to find out. The trust is going to be in if it works or not, and if it can be private. Because you know how the geeks are out there. They're looking for a way to make fun of or show a weakness in and kind of na-na-na-na-na. I mean, you know this. I tell you, the people that are going to make sure you guys stay tried and true are your critics, okay?
Absolutely, yeah. And we're constantly looking. I mean, there's a whole section of our, we've got a system docs thing on our in our GitHub MadeSafe system docs, and it attempts to try and explain to people what MadeSafe is, and within that section of documents there's a thing called attacks. So we're constantly aware of people that will try and trip the code up or try and trick the network in lots of different ways that we see to be attacks. And when the guys are developing there's probably not a day goes by or an hour goes by where they're not thinking, if I do things that way, does it mean it can be attacked by somebody? So it's an absolutely huge consideration for the guys when they're developing.
You know, this is one thing that a lot of people probably don't appreciate as much as maybe I would, is that a lot of these young guys, they go, oh, look what I can do, what I can do, what I can do. And they don't ever think of what somebody can undo. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And from you know, we're a little bit older and kind of more mature and been through. And from early on, you're probably, you know, David was not, you know, like a kid when he was doing all this kind of stuff, getting you going. And I know what they're going to do. This is why Made Safe went. That was the reason for it. And so we had our conversation with David, and, you know, as he's sailing and kind of out of the system and seeing it from the outside perspective, kind of, you know what I can do, and I should do it. And he did. Okay. And then he brings Nick on, and we get the opportunity for us to be free. I mean, it's, when you say, you know, free internet, I don't mean it's like free, doesn't cost anything. I mean, it's free, okay? It is freedom doing that Braveheart thing, okay? I just don't want you to, you know, have your intestines piled up on your chest. So, it's, you know, let's make sure that's what we're here to do, is to help.
That would certainly ruin my day, Ernie, if someone piled my intestines on my chest. That would be a bad day for sure.
Bad. But, you know, they wouldn't even know who to, you know, torture. Yeah, that's the whole point of Made Safe. We got to go get the something, okay? Well, there's nothing to get. Okay, so we're looking at into the year, Christmas present, okay? We're looking for something. We got progress going. Matter of fact, it's going faster than I thought it would. Heck, you were thinking it'd be like by now before you even got all your money. So, you know, I mean, you know, that didn't take long. Now you're going, damn, we got to go to work now. We thought our job was fundraising. Well, that was easy. So now we're looking forward to Made Safe coming online, along with all these other technologies that Made Safe can go on to. You know, it's just ones and zeros going up and down. And if they're encrypted ones and zeros going up and down, and you get incentivizing for helping with that process, heck, what were you waiting for? Here it comes. We'll keep you updated here on Declare Your Independence. Thanks to Nick Lambert, Chief Operating Officer for Made Safe. Made Safe. MAIDSafe.net.
What if the key to which...
There we go. Okay. What we'll go ahead and do is... you can go ahead and stop it, the video. So we can talk. The I need to be up to speed on all the stuff. No, I was talking to Donna, not you. <Hey. laughs> we can have a private conversation. The what I need is, we still didn't get into the hardware. You know, is there anything special that I need to, you know, as I come across stuff? Ooh, there's a sale on terabyte of, you know, it's free, fill out whatever, and I go get it. So yeah. Is there anything I need to worry about? I get the wrong stuff?
It's designed, Ernie, to run in commodity PCs. So, I mean, even older PCs are fine, but I think, I mean, it's... You will get more out of, you'll earn more safe coins because you will be, if you're, so there's that ranking process that we talk about where nodes are ranked, you know, higher or lower than others. The ones that are ranked high are ones that have a lot of computing resources. You give it lots of storage space, the network, you live in an area that has high speed internet, you leave your computer on all the time. As long as you do those things with, you know, a 1 or 2 terabyte hard drive, you'll be in great shape. But you don't have to go and spend, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 on an absolute supercomputer. It's more about leaving it on all the time and a decent amount of resources.
Well, I mean,
and
is it
probably better?
Is it a CPU thing?
CPU is part of the equation, and I think, you know, like I say, hard drive is probably the biggest, the storage that you give to the network. In actual fact, what you'd be better off doing is rather than plowing a lot of money into one computer is maybe having 2 or 3 less high-spec machines would be a better way to go. And well, even things like NAS devices that you can connect to the internet, you know, they're basically just big hard disks that are online, they would work well too.
So somebody, if they wanted, they say, you know what, like Dell Computer finds that somebody was in the internet and kind of take advantage of the way the internet is because it wasn't on Made Safe, and they said, and all the reward of the Bitcoin from these farming, then it went to us. Did you read that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean,
sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, that, my point is that, you know, I don't have to worry about that kind of an attack. And these guys that have all this mining equipment that they did, and they're like, ah, screw this, never mind. I want to take all this this processing power, and I'm going to put it over here on MadeSafe. Well, they probably got overkill because it doesn't really operate that way. What you're saying is, as long as you got good bandwidth and data storage, that's really all you need, right?
Exactly, and fast internet, and I think leaving it on all the time is important as well, because the network needs to know that it's always there, and it downranks any node that is, you know, starting to switch off, you know, regularly. So keeping it on is important as well, and that's why some folks are going for low energy devices, you know, like little single board computers, as well, to run them, because they only, you know, they use so little energy that they can afford to keep them on all the time and really not really feel it in the pocket.
So what is the reward in it? I mean, they're going to find out if some of the early adopters are like, woo-hoo-hoo, I'd be making me some SafeCoin. And how does it distribute it? There's like, I mean, how many decimals does it go down to? The millionth decibel? Or is it kind of like a Satoshi down to eighth kind of thing? Or, I mean,
yeah, initially they'll just be paying out in full SafeCoins, but the guys have the ability to make it divisible another 430... You know how there's like the ability for 430 billion to exist? Well, they can be divisible by the same number again, I believe. So there's an ability to create a lot of these. And initially, Ernie, it will be full safe coins that will be getting farmed. And they're done on a random basis. So as the network grows and more users are added to the network, your chances of success become less and less. So the ability for the individual to farm a lot of SafeCoin reduces as the network grows, as you would expect.
Okay, so it's not directly related to how much data is transferred. It's still kind of a random thing.
It's a lot, yeah. And the way to think about it is it's a lottery ticket. And if you have more computers at home, like more average PCs, that you're using to farm, you'll basically have more lottery tickets, but it's all done at random, and the network's designed to be that way.
Okay, so it's random. So yeah, see, that's another thing that I needed to understand. I didn't know. You know, I'm going, okay, so if I got it on all the time and I'm doing and kind of whatever, and I'm just getting a steady flow of however much data is going out, I'm getting in SafeCoin. That's not true. It's a random thing. I don't have to use my CPU to be solving some equation, but I'm still getting random payout of SafeCoin.
That's correct. And it's totally random, which I think is good from a security perspective. And if your node is ranked well, you will earn more SafeCoin. So if you leave your computer on all the time, and let's say you're ranked 10, which is great, and in comparison to somebody who's got a crap machine and never turns it on, and they might be ranked 1, your chances of when you get SafeCoin, you'll get far more. So it is random, but you need to try and make sure you're ranking well and producing the desirable behavior that we've just talked about.
Okay, now is there already a secondary market for SafeCoin or the investment? I mean, it's kind of like, ooh, I see you have 100,000. What, you know what? I will buy that for, you know, blah, blah. Is there already a secondary market out there?
There's two, yeah. So Master Exchange, which was the original one, is still there. And another exchange, I'm not even sure how to pronounce it, is Polyonix, I think. It's Polyonix is another exchange that run it as well. So these guys are buying and selling every day. I think the daily volume is about $20,000. It's not a huge amount, but it's decent enough. The market cap of the currency is currently, before I came on the show, it's 12 million. So they've gone up by 50% since we did the crowd sales, which is really encouraging because all the other cryptocurrencies are bobbing right now.
Really? So that's going well. It's not for lack of effort on our part. I guarantee you that. You know?
You guys are amazing for us. So I mean, we've got a list of people that we are developing that have really helped us through some kind of strange and arduous times, and you're pretty close to the top of that list, Ernie. So we really appreciate all that you guys have done and are doing.
No, are you kidding me? You guys are like go ahead. You guys are like the answer to like everything.
Well, that's good.
You know, I mean, because that's, you know, this is what I've been waiting on. You know, this is I don't think you appreciate. Let me put it this way. When I was at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, we had our Freedom Summit, you know, like a week or two before that. And I've been screaming for this kind of thing. I go, why don't we have blah, blah, blah? And I was describing you. And Rafael Rodriguez, that was helping Paul Snow put on the Texas Bitcoin Conference, he kind of, you know, out of the side of his mouth, he comes up at, towards the end of it and he says, you know, you need to talk to this guy, David Irvine, okay? I met him in Berlin at the Berlin had their thing.
I remember, yeah, still, was at the bar. I still remember meeting him.
Really? Really?
Yeah, well, I was there as well. Yeah, I still remember meeting that guy, yeah.
Hey, you know, we're coming in to the show again. I don't have another guest. Can you go another segment?
How long? Just another 15?
Yeah, to 15.
Yeah, sure. Let's go for it.
All right, here we go.
Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Hancock and another independence declaring kind of guy, Nick Lambert. We're not done. Okay, we were just talking and yakking, and then the show starts again. So we got to finish this up. A couple of things I did want to clear up and make sure that you knew that I found out during the break is that the reward for supplying the resources on the MadeSafe network is not directly related to like how much data you put out and so on. It's a random thing. And he said there's kind of a security issue with that. And I see why that would be important, because think about it. Just last week, Dell Computers came out and they found that somebody, it wasn't a flaw really in Bitcoin. It was a flaw in the internet. So because of these, you know, central servers, because of this kind of almost, you kind of decentralized a little bit, but still got some centralization instead of a distributed thing, what someone was able to do was to go in and said, and when they reward the new mined Bitcoins, it goes to me. And it would go to this, you know, account guy, whatever, and says, you know, all the resources that people have been doing, all of the mine, all the electrons burned, all the energy done, the big giant electric bills, and it went to this guy, who I don't know. And it, because the freshly mined Bitcoins, you can't know. I mean, that's kind of one of the things about it. And I'm going, wow, well, that sucked. So on the MadeSafe protocol, we have, it's a little bit different. It's random, because if you just had it, you know, going to one place, that'd be a point of attack, you know. So I'm, okay, I can see that, and as long as I, so I wanted to make that clear. And it's not, you know, the hard drive is really probably the big thing. The fact that you really, Nick has been emphasizing it, you keep your computer on, and that you have, you know, good internet connection, then it ranks you higher, you know, the ability to serve the network. But every bit of data goes out and it's chopped up, encrypted, and distributed and replicated. You know, what happens when somebody turns off their computer? Well, that piece of data is repeated somewhere else anyway. So I'm going, okay. So I start to get more understanding of how this thing works. But the one thing that I wanted us to talk about was the genesis of our relationship. When we went to the Texas Bitcoin Conference, all this time, for years, I've been screaming about this. And I give examples of, you know, different things and how distributed works better and yada, yada, yada. And then Rafael Rodriguez comes to me and he kind of like, you know, hey, man, you know who you need to talk to? Is this guy, you know, David Irvine I met in Berlin. Now, Nick was there. Nick, tell us about that conversation, because that's really what got us hooked up, was whatever you said to Rafael, he's kind of, you know, okay, and I get it. Well, tell us about that conversation.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, that was the first, the Berlin Bitcoin Conference was the first conference we really went to as a company. And we'd really just come out of stealth mode at the end of the of January with a Wired article. And so we went along to this conference in Germany with no expectations at all. And Being Scottish, we immediately found ourselves at the bar. I don't know how that happened, but we were standing there anyway, and this kind of outgoing guy came up, and you know, he was full of character, and he was just really chatting away, and he was talking about how passionate he was about Bitcoin. And obviously, it transpires this guy is Raphael. So we kind of he explained why he liked Bitcoin, and we did the same as you do at these types of conferences. And then he asked what we did, and we started to explain to him in probably quite poor terms, because at that point we hadn't really started to refine like how we talk about the network and things like that. So it took us a while, but I think Raphael started, the penny dropped fairly quickly, and he started to realize how big it was. And then he brought Paul Snow over, and we had a chat to Paul, and he said, well, why didn't you come to the Texas Bitcoin conference, which was the following month, which we duly did. So it's amazing. That's why probably Scottish people drink a lot, is because you make lots of great contacts in bars.
Did you go to the Texas Bitcoin conference?
Yeah, we went to
Austin. I didn't know you guys were there. You saw Well, you had to see all the Freedom's Phoenix banners everywhere.
Yeah, so we went there, and my dad actually lives in Dallas, so I've been to Texas a few times. So and it was amazing conference, really eye-opening how big Bitcoin, because Bitcoin still, the conferences are still much bigger in America, in my opinion, than they are in the UK, certainly the ones I've been to. So they are much bigger, but the conference in Austin was really eye-opening, and we met, you know, lots of great people there.
Well, I tell you, the one thing that you got a good dose of was at the Texas Bitcoin conference, there was the anarchist wing of you know, representing Bitcoin and why it was important to a lot of the people that would have a lot more understanding of MadeSafe. And I didn't know you guys were there. Heck, if I'd known them, heck, you made me have to go to freaking New York to meet you. Okay,
so we did a talk as well, Ernie.
I'm sorry.
We did a talk as well on the second day. So yeah, we were up in near the kind of hackathon thing. So we were they put us in the broom cupboard, I think.
You know what happened? He told me at the end of the conference. I mean, they were like having the concerts and stuff. And he goes, and I'm like, damn it, because I went and talked to the hackers. And I go, look, man, where's this anonymous just button? I mean, I don't know what the heck you guys are doing. Why is this not emphasized? So we have Christoph Atlas coming on, you know, a couple of times, and he wrote the book Anonymous Bitcoin, and he's like, he put it well. He said, you know, the sense of urgency in developing these features just wasn't there, you know. Well, then after New York Department of We Rule You comes up, Ben What's-His-Face, you know, I'm going, all of a sudden now it becomes an issue. And because I was just, because I wanted to demonstrate and, you know, stomp in my feet and wave my arms and say that there was a market for exactly what you guys had already done. And then they go, you know, you need to talk to this guy. The who? And when I did, I had no idea you were in Texas. I did not know this until just now. Okay? So when he said, you know, you guys were gone, you know, I didn't see you. So I, you know, had David on. We talked. I go, yep. The penny dropped like, I don't know, before I met you. Okay? So I'm, you know, I get it. So this is, it's interesting how this stuff happens. Have you started to get a lot more of this kind of aha from everybody faster? Is it starting to be easier to meet people that understand this? And why do you think that is?
I think it is. I think we sometimes talk about it in the office, and I think it's almost like trying to explain to somebody what the internet was before there was the internet. It has its own, it's got its own language. You know, we talk about decentralized this, we talk about, you know, self-encryption, we talk about self-authentication, and for lots of people these are quite new words. And I think part of the issue as well, Ernie, is that because the network is not up and running for, you know, consumers, people like you and I, to go and actually use the network, what happens is people get bogged down in how it works. So for example, every morning I get in my car and I drive to work, and I actually have no idea how the car works. It just gets me to work. And I think our network will be the same way. At the moment, people are obsessing over the details of how it will work. But for end users like you and I, soon they won't care how it works, because they will just use the applications and know it works and it's great. I think there will always be these technical people, however, that these guys just have to know how things work, and that's why they're really good technical people. So I think we have struggled a bit to explain the network. I think it's becoming easier. The language is developing. But I think once we launch in beta, I just think the vast majority won't really care.
You know, I know what I wanted. I know what I needed it for. I know how it was going to affect my lives and that of everybody else. But the problem was is that they got bogged down, like you say, in all the technical details. And the thing that I wanted to know is I wanted to know that the philosophy behind it was there, and nobody had it. Nobody understood. Nobody cared. It wasn't a big deal. They're more interested in something else. And what I was interested in were the features. I'm going, I need to be able to unlimited put stuff up, have unlimited access, and never be taken down, because as a political activist, I've had way too much experience. Whenever you have any kind of a real hand against tyranny, oh, they want to show you their fist against your hand. So this is really interesting to me that we are able to have this discussion and have the same goal. And I want to help. So this is, I know you guys are appreciative of our help and so on, but what form did that take? What did you get from our participation that you weren't getting somewhere else? Why were you so appreciative of us caring?
I think it's just nice sometimes to hear the voice of support out there. And people have said to us, you know, people that we've met, people that, you know, just within the Bitcoin space that know you and have said, oh yeah, I heard about you on Ernest Hancock's show. And so I think these messages of support are great. And I mean, the 8 years that we've had to this point, I mean, the last six have been by far the best. But I mean, there's still been a lot of tough days in there, and, you know, things are in the crowd sale. Not everything went to plan. And I think sometimes it's just nice to know that when you have a tough day, there's still somebody in your corner rooting for you. So I think that type of thing really helps. And I think just the awareness that you guys are creating in that part of the world. I mean, it's obviously being a libertarian is something you're very passionate about. And I think what we're doing fits well with that. And I think just, you know, raising awareness amongst people that appreciate that is just an unbelievable support to us.
You know, the people that we, it was, you know, as much as you appreciated it, I did, because what I was screaming for was exactly what you offered. And that's where the click was, because I didn't have the technical ability you guys did. Okay. So they go up and they say, Ernie, you know, that's just too big. You can't, well, that would, I don't under, I go, made safe, you know, duh. And who did the video that you guys have? I mean, how was that accomplished?
Yeah, so that was Shona actually did that. So I worked with Shona for quite a few years. She worked the digital marketing agency I was talking about before. I worked here. She also worked there. So Shona's very talented. So she drew the concept come from there's a lot of videos on YouTube called 2 Minute Physics. And it's a guy that just kind of shows you how he creates these drawings to really inexpensively explain kind of complex concepts. And so Shona did that whole thing herself. We got a voiceover done, but that was it. So I'm glad you like it, because we are now, Shona's just starting work on another one that explains how our vault network operates, and how we have all these different personas and vaults, and it explains to, attempts to explain to the layman how our vault network works in ways that you know, people like me and you can understand. So I'm glad you like the format, and we're going to be producing some more of those.
VaultNet is what? Get the vault's data? I mean, your Dropbox?
So the vault is really the part of the network that's stored on everyone's computers. And that's where the encrypted shards of data are stored. And the vaults altogether make up the network.
You know, this is, I'm glad we're in break now. I snuck you in. So the thing, I just kind of,
No.
I just kind of like, you know, I just brought the music down and I, get to, you know, rip you off a little more. So this is, the appreciation that I have for you is it's reciprocated, because I'm telling you, this is what I have been waiting. That's why we're so passionate. And I think what happened is a lot of the people that they just needed to have this real life experience perspective from someone that's been there, that understands the importance of what you're doing. And they get bogged down in, you know, what they're not even thinking, that there was somebody that doesn't want them to do it. And I'm going, no, man, you have no idea how disruptive this kind of stuff is. And everything that we do as humans, human beings to not be livestock, you know, needs this ability to communicate privately and securely. And in your video that was done there, I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't have written it better for exactly what I wanted. So I'm going, I understand. I want to help. Please keep me up to date. Let us know what's going on and how we can help. We got a new project thing that's starting this week. There's a bunch of stuff that we're doing that is making sure that we're going to have an impact on what we're doing using your stuff. And I just want to make sure that we are a resource for you guys. As long as you guys keep me up to speed on what's happening, then we're all over it.
Of course. And you can write to me. I know David's busy, but you can write to me anytime. If there's anything you need to talk, Ernie, just drop me a line and we'll get it done for you.
I'm doing my best not to bug you. There's 15 gazillion times I want to, you know, talk to you, and I'm just going, nope. You know, bite your lip, Ernie. Leave him alone, man. Let them do their thing. But I hear a lot about what's going on inside from other people, you know, that are starting to get involved. And I tell you, it was people in the Bitcoin space that were, I don't know, either floundering around on something else, or they kind of didn't know, and all of a sudden now they're big giant fans and they can't wait to turn on their farm and drive.
Yeah. No, that's great. But listen, anytime, I really mean that, Ernie. You know, just let me know if there's anything that you need, and we'll try our best to help you out.
I'll try and not bug you, because I'd be bugging you all the time, you know. So you keep working, man. Get back to work.
Will do. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Nick. Thanks a lot. Peace, brother. Yeah.
Take it easy.
Bye. Yeah. Sorry we didn't come back with the music. I lost track of time as we were talking. We got to keep them extra. So you can understand why I'm so excited about this, because it's not so much the technical aspect. I know because the first thing I did, the first time I didn't know they were at the Texas Bitcoin Conference. I did not know that, you know, because I didn't even hear about Made Safe until at the end. I mean, they're playing music and concerts going and everything. Raphael goes, hey, man, you should talk to, you know. So, really? Okay. Well, that's why I've been, well, how come you didn't tell me this before? You know? So, you came to the Freedom Summit straight from Berlin. You know, we come here. We have the conference for a few days here. Been doing, and you wait till the end to tell me this? Seriously? So it was good to have, you know, to have him come on. And then I go, oh, damn it. That's why I went to the New York Bitcoin Conference, just to meet him. Heck, I could have just, you know, met him in Texas. But I'm glad I did, because at the New York Bitcoin Conference, I could see, you know, behind the dark cow eyes, I saw my enemy. I don't know if anybody else saw it. They're trying to be nice and working with the government. And, you know, I heard all this stuff that they're saying about how they're, you know, working with them. They just want to understand Bitcoin more, and they're going to give it legitimacy, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow, you guys have no idea what you're dealing with. So the Made Safe, I could see, you know, what that, it's a concept. Now, the technical aspect of it, they're demonstrating that they can do it. You know, in fact, I thought that's what was going to be done. It was very clear to me that we were going to be the internet. I can't emphasize this enough to the younger guys. As a young activist, you know, late 20s, early 30s, you know, we're doing it. We're starting to see, wow, I'll give you an example. Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America and Sheriff Richard Mack, which now we found out is running for sheriff in Navajo County, northeastern Arizona. That'll be interesting. And you might, you know, get to play with that a little bit. But they came to speak at a SAFE function, you know, which we had Second Amendment is for everyone. So they came. We were doing, you know, woohoo here in Arizona. Long story. So we're making headlines and being butt heads and so on. So Sheriff Mack and Larry Pratt, and that's how they got to know each other there. And then later, Sheriff Mack would be a spokesperson for Gunners of America and such. They came and gave a talk, and we were critical because that day we were on the internet communicating email on our 3,500 baud modem kind of crap. I mean, you know, just, you know, one of those deals. And what happened was we were in communication live with activists that were in Connecticut. And it was at the time that they were doing, 3-day waiting period and background checks and all that kind of stuff. Well, the NRA was like, oh, we're good little fascists. And as long as you get, if you throw away the list after you check, well, then they'll be okay, or, you know, some crap like that. Gunners of America are like, No background check. Well, then in Connecticut, Gunners of America, the local representatives there, they were advocating and getting legislation passed and done with the sanction of. Gunners of America says, well, as long as it's an instant background check, well, then it's okay to get on the list. Well, Larry Pratt from Gunners of America, he's sitting there going, nope, no background check, no that. I go, hey, man, well, you need to talk to your boys in Connecticut. What? And I go, right here, read the emails. They're doing it right now in the legislature. The hearing kind of representing GOA says as long as it's instant, it's kind of going to, what? So we realized that the activist on the street could know more than even the head of the organization itself, because we had instant communication with people that were standing there. And that flavored how we set up Freedom's Phoenix with the special editions, people that could report. You know, there's a kid on the smoking rim of the bomb that went off in the car bomb or the suicide, whatever, with this video that he did with his smartphone that uploaded in Freedom's Phoenix and hello. You know, we understood the power of instant communication with people that are there. Well, he doesn't have a, you know, cable news network hat and microphone that kind of, you give a crap. It's not until just the last few years that, you know, all of a sudden just people reporting had any credibility at all. Oh, it doesn't matter. That's just internet stuff. That's just people stuff. You know, it gets vetted. You know, that's why we have, you know, Julia Tarnowski, hopefully I say her name right, you know, out there doing, you know, Brave the World. Now we start putting her banner ads up on Freedom's Phoenix. Yeah, here's somebody with a perspective. Here's somebody that's out in the street. Here's somebody that's traveling. Here's somebody that gets, you know, somebody like that. We have, you know, the activists over at Bitcoin Not Bombs. They understand the power of this. You know, we have people we're working with like Roberts and Roberts. They're always pimping Roberts and Roberts metal brokerage. Why? Because these are people that we trust that understand the philosophy of what's going on. And we can kind of spread the help around and distribute kind of, you know, here we go. We understand how important it is to be able to just get the news in a timely, real time. Because even all these people that say they represent you, that want to help, hell, a lot of times, even good intentions, you know, Larry Pratt I've known for a long time, I trust him, I like him, but that doesn't mean that he's everywhere all the time. And all of a sudden we find out, as a little Second Amendment activist here in Phoenix, Arizona, when we got Sheriff Mack and Larry Pratt standing there telling us what's what and GOA, that at the same moment across the country, they're doing something else without them even knowing it. But we did. Instantaneously. Once we understood that, we're going, oh, this is not going to be good for the bad guys. And then, as we started working with Terry Bressie at Checkpoint USA, see, the government was trying to take, they did for a while, were taking down his videos. Am I being detained? Am I being detained? Yeah, and we're going to beat you, we're going to arrest you, and you know what? You don't get to put the video up. So we're going, really? Okay, well, we put it up on Freedom's Phoenix servers. But we didn't have the capacity to be like a YouTube. We were doing that, you know, right at the beginning of YouTube. If they won't do it, we'll do it. Let's do it. Well, now the MadeSafe protocol allows for anybody to do it. It's out there unlimited forever and always, and you can't take it down because there's no place to take it down. You know, the power of this, I don't think is fully understood by people because they haven't experienced it. They don't understand because they've never been denied. Well, they're starting to. All of a sudden, Facebook accounts are being turned off. You don't have access to your friends. You're being surveilled. You're being categorized. And you always click, I totally agree. Well, I totally agree that you don't get to see whatever I agree to. You know? Made safe. We're going to keep you up to speed. We waited till the end of the summer. We told them months ago that we wait till August to get an update. We got a good update from Nick. All right. We'll keep you up.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. and Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you, and please feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Wish now voices can be heard. Just want us to be louder and louder and louder. What the hell we fighting for? Just surrender and it won't hurt at all. Just got time to say your prayer.
Share with you just some of the headlines. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to go down the front page of Freedom's Phoenix. I'm just going to scroll through it. And then there's some that I'll just kind of put just from today. Now, over the weekend, I tried to, you know, I go through and I, you know, okay, this, and I send it to staff to put up and everything. But then I don't look. It's a 30th anniversary weekend. I do nothing. The only thing I see is Donna, my wife. Hello. And you know, we should have her. We'll do that in the third hour. That's right. You can come on. We'll talk about our weekend, kids and grandkids and kid and more kidding. We're going to do this weekend. We're going to take another day off and do the water park, stay at the hotel with the water park, kind of bring the kids over and get pictures. Because we did it Sunday, had everybody together, for all our grandkids' birthdays, which also happens to be, oh, yeah, today's Tatum's birthday, too. No, I mean, yesterday was. Okay. You know, it's when you have a grandbaby on your anniversary, guess what? It's not your anniversary anymore. So we had a big party Sunday. Dang it. We forgot to call her on Monday and say, she's two, so, she'll live. But we had a big party the day before. Now, what I'm going to go ahead and do is I want to just start, because I look at Freedom's Phoenix probably the same way you guys do. You know, I go and I just, get a beat on, what's going on, and I go, okay. This is not good. Here, let me refresh it so I see it the way you do, because I was logged in as me. Okay. So when I go on the Freedom's Phoenix, and this is what I see. Here I have, now we're, you see some different formatting change. We're going to have it totally reformatted. We thought we were improving a lot of the interface by putting stuff on the side, but it wasn't interactive, and now we got to install. We moved the servers all over in anticipation of Made Safe and some other stuff, because we need to get stability in the site. We were just, reaching capacity and a lot of stuff and doing, we've been working behind the scenes. There's a lot of things. We're making good progress. So I'm really happy that we're making progress. And there's other stuff, the social networking stuff. I know. But we got to have the RSS feeds of the selected and check the box. And this one goes Facebook, this one Tumblr, this one Twitter, this one Pinterest, this one Instagram, kind of set and kind of an interactive with. And then we're going to open it up to more people to be able to access to a lot of the features that a lot of people don't know. But we had to get stability. There's some of the features, the modules and custom stuff, a lot of people don't know that subscribers have had access to. But I bet you, out of the thousands of people that are signed up as members on Freedom's Phoenix, I'll bet you only 50, 100, make use of the custom modules that we have. Because we keep changing and doing and beta and testing, but we're going to start doing. That's one reason we hired Dean, a good friend of mine, that, all he's been doing is learning how to do a lot of video, doing editing, learning Linux, getting the background so that we could do the interfacing with everybody and really make it the useful activist site that it was always intended to be. And it's been very useful for me, but, we've got to do the just buttons, for everybody. So we're working on just buttons. Now, let's just go through some of the headlines, and we'll go ahead and talk about these. Let's see, what we got here? Obama's Pentagon covered up war crimes in Afghanistan says, Iraq crisis, West mandate limited by national borders? Okay. West mandate, limited by national... In the Middle East, the first shots of every war define the narrative we all dutifully follow. So, too, the greatest crisis since the last greatest crisis in Iraq. Do I care? I want to go in there. So, independent in the UK talking about, you know, we're bombing Iraq again. Seriously? You know, I mean, that's what I got to deal with. I'm going in the weekend. I'm just going to take that and we're bombing again. And this from the guy that, you know, got us out of Iraq. He's going to leave it for the next president. We're in Iraq again. What? You know what? We don't have enough problems over in Ukraine. I mean, this is all going to spill over in the same thing. And World War III. Is it going to have mushroom clouds? I don't know. But if I, you know, what did you always hear me say? I always said, Golden Gate Bridge, St. Louis Arch, toast. Why? Because it has to be another iconic American middle homeland mushroom cloud something terrorist BS something. You know, the only thing is that it's way more difficult for them to, you know, stop people that just know and mechanisms by which they can share this information. That's what WikiLeaks is about. You know, that's what all this encryption is about. You know, the Bitcoin made safe. See, where is it that you go and what mechanism that you use to be secret, secure, and forever have something up? Where is that? I guess BitTor or something, and they got all kinds of just buttons there, you know, with 15 gazillion keystrokes. So that's one thing that I'm so glad it made safe understands. They're going, look, it has to be easy and just automatic in the background. They've made it to where it's not. See, when I was a kid, there were movies done about making fun of AT&T. You know, what'd they call it back then? AT&T. you know, the phone company. Bells, the whatever. Because the phone company, what did they have? Access into everybody, everything. You know, do you think they weren't tapping? Of course they were. You get reams and reams and reams of paper, you know, and every single person in the FBI and Hoover wanted to, you know, surveil. You know, all the political movements. You know, all the, you know, they want to know every affair of everybody that did anything for something kind of, we got time and money. They're the Stasi. We had some TED Talks of guys that, you know, lived in East Germany during the 80s and stuff. They're going, you know, 70s and 80s. They're being surveilled for buying banned books in West Germany and distributing these ideas to people. They said that Berlin Wall came down, the CIA didn't know, and this and that. And but you find out later, there was a book. I can't remember what the name of the book was. It was something that's kind of like, I don't know, the impact it had in the revolution here, you know, Thomas Paine's Common Sense kind of thing. But, you know, they get, you know, their, you know, books, ideas are very painful to they, them, those that don't want these ideas shared. But what happens when you have the ability to share anonymously? You get the whistleblow anonymously. Any and everybody does. And it's available out there just like pirated software. Now, how does made, you know, we didn't even ask about that. How does MadeSafe address intellectual property? I think it just goes away. There is no such thing. It's out there. You never take it down, and it belongs to everybody for everything. That is, there's going to be a lot more resistance than I think these guys realize. But Leviathan is just so Leviathan-ish. You know, they don't know. And they just take a big, giant hammer to everything. It'll be something like, thou shalt not be allowed to even have encryption software download. You don't think so? That's where they were going in the mid-90s with the Zimmerman thing. You know, the PGP, pretty good privacy. They were going, you know, you're not allowed. This is banned technology. Really? No, don't think so? What did you think they did with the New York Department of Financial Services? They said, in order to create these kinds of financial services, like Bitcoin, you need a bit license. It is now illegal. Well, it's not legal yet, but that's certainly what they want. Will they get away with it? I don't see it's a rampart fight. It's not, you know, set your teeth and, you know, get the eye of the tiger once more through the breach and, other men will hold their manhood cheap. They weren't here on St. Crispin's Day as we go charge the blah, blah, blah. You know, what was that? Henry V? You know, it's, you know, Kenneth Branagh did that really well, you know, as they made that into a movie. Excuse me. And I'm going, I don't want to have that fight. If I got to fight them in the wrong place, but they want to fight every place. Will they be able to fight us as individuals as we start having opposition to this stuff? Yeah, I just want to bring that out. When we come back, we'll go ahead and go through a bunch of the headlines. And in the third hour, we'll get Don on, and we'll talk about our first 30 years and what we got planned for the future. Because there's a future, right? I think there is. I'm planning on it. What are we going to do about it? And how are we going to help you and be of service?
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Okay, what we're watching is the 17-year-old World Championship yo-yo. We got this on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix. I forgot I watched this weekend. This guy, I mean, I didn't even know you could do this with a yo-yo. You got to go see it. Just go on the front page. What is it? I don't know. It's a championship yo-yo thing. I guarantee you put that in a search, it's going to come up. This guy, I mean, damn. Anyway, go see it. Go watch it. Entertain yourself. I thought it was co. All right. Go check it out. All right. I can't stop watching this thing. Yeah. Go. Woo! Damn. All right. You got to go see that. You know, that's entertainment. All right. Now, and that's the kind of things that we put. I mean, I just want to show excellence and stuff. You know, I mean, it's kind of cool. You know, that's one thing about Freedom's Phoenix. It's, you know, it's cool. It's cool. You know, wow, what a variety of cool. Yeah, cool science, cool medicine, cool invention, cool new materials, cool everything except the freaking news. Seriously, do I got to put that in there? And we're going to talk in the third hour about so. You know, I guess we're going to have to, you know, damn it. It's the reason that we put a lot of this other stuff up. You know, are we really a news web portal site of, you know, the talking about what they, them, those want us to talk about? It's only as backdrop, you know, that's just the white noise in the background as motivation for a lot of the other stuff that we talk about. Now I'm going, look, therefore, here's the solution. Here's the solution. Okay? We're going to be setting up today, trying to get Will Pangman on this week. It looks like I got an email from Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope, and they made it clear that, okay, we're in. We're going to do a fact video. They're going to be a frequently asked questions. We're going to go ahead, you know, we talked to the Bitcoin guys, and even though Richard Grove from TragedyandHope.com, even though he's been, you know, critical of Bitcoin for a lot of good same stuff I've been bringing up, same stuff, I'm like, yeah, well, tell me this, okay? He's going to go ahead, and we're going to try and demonstrate, after New York did their We Rule You Bit License thing, Bitcoin Not Bombs did their intergalactic bit license. Yeah, and their slogan is, we can laminate cards too. So they craft number 22. I got me my intergalactic Bitcoin license. Now I'm going to get me my card too. So go up and just do, you know, look up for, you know, Bitcoin Not Bombs. You go there and you'll see all kinds of links to their Bitcoin license, and it's a spoof on it. I mean, of course, you can just, you know, you got your inner, each bearer of this card has an inalienable right to, like, do whatever the hell they want, you know, so bite me. But it's just another mechanism by which you put your QR code for your donations. Now, Drew Phillips made us QR-coded dime cards for us when we went to Porkfest years ago. We would just, you know, just whip, I got it in my wallet. You know, go get my wallet, will you, baby? I think it's in there. You know, and I just pull it out and I go blip, blip, blip. Anyone's give me, I got it right here. You know, even if I don't have my phone on me, I just, you know, blip. You know, it's got the card. Very cool. So he goes, yeah, we can do the bit license with that same kind of thing. Register your name on the, you know, the bit.co.in, Bitcoin, okay? Well, it's a name coin thing, and it's how, you know, you do your whatever, all that geek stuff. And so I talked to Derek Slopey about it. I'm going, can we, you know, do that? Yeah, here it is. It's a bit license. you know, or it's a, you know, QR code, but it's a dime card with a Bitcoin QR code. He had these for years. So Drew was cool, and he made these for a bunch of us from Phoenix here. When we went there, we had, matter of fact, I do have, I'll just, you know, you can blip right here. So this has been, that concept kind of went, you know, without the dime in it, kind of went into the BitLicense Intergalactic, you know, make fun of it. So we're deciding, okay, can you have a secure wallet offline that we can have a really good experience and a fundraiser for Tragedy and Hope, someone that's critical of Bitcoin? Can we demonstrate that it can be secure offline? And what about this anonymous, you know, giving? Now, can we do that? Can we do some dark wallet stuff? Can we, can, you know, I'm trying to get a hold of Cody again and say, hey, okay, you want to kind of work in this? You want to do this? What do you want to do? I don't know. You know, we're trying to get everybody involved, and kind of, because when we launch this thing, you know, probably today, tomorrow, then, you know, soon, okay, this week, and hopefully today, when we do this, it's not going to be a secret. It's going to be tweeted out to everybody, and everybody has anything to do with Bitcoin at the highest levels. So they want it to be a success, because if they can bring Richard Grove over to see that this is distributed money that, you know, all, even though it made every intention, they want to control it. They, them, those. They, who's they? The guys that won't leave us alone, that's who. People that say we need licenses, that's who. Okay, that's who they are. You know, who are they? Are they leave me alone? No. They. It's that simple. So what we're going to go ahead and do is demonstrate that this can be done. Okay. You get Richard Grove on this, because all the criticisms that he would have of Bitcoin are the same ones I would have. I mean, it sounds like a cashless society to me. If they're going to be able to link, you know, an individual to the Bitcoin and its use, well, then that's what they always wanted. Well, that's a little kernel of all the other crap they threw up on the wall. I guarantee that's the one they really want. So we need to demonstrate, is that possible? Because I want to bring up something dark, you know, everybody, you know, we got a few minutes here before we get the good stuff with Donna. And go to the Freedom's Feet. I mean, it's just cool story after cool story after cool story. I mean, it's just, you know, but it's also a lot of the news of the ooh, and they want to do the war thing. But I focus on the light, on the solutions here, because I see that's the only solution. It's like Bitcoin, not bombs. I mean, that's the whole point. It's a concept behind it. You know, can you have a people's currency that can't get, you know, assimilated into the Borg? That's what they want to do. They, them, those. They won't leave us alone. So, okay, can we? Well, we're going to demonstrate it. And if we can convince Richard, you know, because I go to Richard for, hey, help me out here. You know, if he can be convinced, then, you know, I think a lot of other people would be convinced, too. And if it's not Bitcoin, it'll be something like it. So hopefully, you know, I think the guys are, they're kind of in on this Bitcoin. We're going to find out. All right? This is a good example. Here we go. This week. And that's why, you know, like MadeSafe, they're very appreciative of what, you know, we've been able to just appreciate them. You know, well, if Bitcoin can't be the dark, you don't get to seeism, well, I'm going to something else. You know, so let's find out. We're going to find out this week. Because it's a philosophy behind it. The people behind it. The people that want to demonstrate what's behind it. It is us. It's a people's currency. It's a people's net. It's a people. It's democratized across. You know, I mean, even the liberals love this. Because it gives individuals power. But that's not really often what they want. They want to be the ones in power. In the name of, you know, we help the people. God, yeah, but they definitely, we want to rule you better, but they definitely want to rule you. So this whole concept of distributed, this is a movement. It's a psychology. It is a cultural thing. That's where we're making the biggest stride. That's why, you know, I hit it off with Julia, you know, Brave the World, because she understands it's a culture thing. Anybody that says it's all about the culture, they're not worried about legislation. That's a side effect. Government will do whatever they can to be legitimate. You know, hey, I'm with you. Where are you guys at? Oh, yeah, that's where I'm at. I just decided. Yeah, right. You know, so I don't worry about they, them, those. That's why I just call they, them, those. I can give you all kinds of names. I can give you which administration. I can give you all the kinds. You know, that's when I was producing for Charles Goyette. He was great at that. He still is. You go to charlesgoyette.com, man. You can see, oh, he give you what fur on, you know, exactly who they are and what they are doing. But I'm just, you know, I skip to the end. I'm just, you know, that people have a lot of success, and I'm glad they're there. One less thing I got to do. But for me, I'm in a different mindset. I care what we think, the influence that we have on our children, you know, on our neighbors, on ourselves, on our relationships. Don and I will be talking. We haven't sat down and talked, you know, that much with you guys, and we'll do this in the next hour. But I am very optimistic. In the end, freedom wins. It just gets really messy first. So we're going to do some open thinking. You know, we weren't allowed to talk about it this week. I bring it up. Don's like, no, the world could screw. I don't want to talk about it. So Tuesday, I get to talk about it. So now we're going to talk about it. All the stuff I build up, I wasn't allowed to talk about. And maybe we can talk about it. Because this is all, we're all in this together. We've always been very open with our life. You know, our home's open. And all the things that we do, we're going to open it up even more. A lot of the software, you know, behind the scenes on Freedom Speech, that's what we're doing. I mean, I know it's that, you know, it's working, it's fine, you know, but it's not anywhere near what we wanted it to be and how we had to get some infrastructure stuff taken care of. Well, we're getting that done. So it's going to be a lot more interactive. We're going to open it up to a lot more people. We're going to do a lot more. But there's a reason. There's a reason. Because I can you feel, you know, the werewolf breathing in your ear? There's a vampire, you know, starting to come out. You got, well, you know, I just step to the side over here and let them, you know, eat each other. We're working on it. We're going to talk about it in the third hour. You guys stay right there. And in the break, just go to freedomsphoenix.com. Just look at the headlines. You'll see what I'm talking about.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
This is the Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates, online at thelibertybeat.com. I'm Brian Hagan with your Liberty Beat for Monday, August 11th, 2014. Gold opened today at $1,310. Silver opened today at $19.97. And Bitcoin is trading around $588.65. Support for the Liberty Beat comes from Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Incorporated, specializing in precious metals since 1977. Online at rrbi.co or by phone at 800-874-9760. In the news, the New York Post reports that the New York City City Council will not be accepting over 30,000 signatures for the high-rise safety initiative. That's a measure that would require an investigation into all high-rise collapses on or since September 11th of 2001. City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito told the Post that the city will not waste taxpayer dollars by, quote, humoring conspiracy theorists. Activists and 9/11 victims' family members with the New York City Coalition for Accountability Now have worked since March to gather over 100,000 signatures to place the measure on the November ballot. The group released a statement Friday stating that they had filed suit against the city. Representatives of the city will be required to appear in court for an initial hearing on Thursday, August 14th. This past Saturday, a crowd of 75 found themselves at Brave New Books in Austin for the Alliance of Austin Agoras 8th Networking Party. Speakers included Catherine Bleich of TheBitMom.com, Jessica and Justin Armand of My Magic Mud, and Tracy Ward of Pinky's Paleoteas. The speakers told inspirational stories of their own agorist journeys and left the crowd with a series of practical steps that one can take to join the counter-economy. The speeches can be heard and found online at sovereignliving.com in the podcast feed. If you're interested to learn more about unschooling, a philosophy of child-led education, there's an unschool support group meeting scheduled for tonight at Central Market North on Lamar in Austin. Join experienced unschoolers and those seeking to learn more in the outdoor eating area by the playground anytime from 6:30 until 9 this evening. Support for the Liberty Beat comes from My Magic Mud, all-natural teeth whitener. Go to MyMagicMud.com to hear a short interview with Dr. Griffin Cole. That's MyMagicMud.com. And support comes from the notorious activist Michael Cargill. He has a new show called Come and Talk It,
test,
live each Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on 1370 AM in Austin. That's Sundays at 4 on 1370 AM.
Test.
This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, August 11th, 2014. Check out the website at thelibertybeat.com. A new report released by a civilian watchdog agency accuses the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department of allowing their worst employees to continue working amid a number of scandals involving officers facing criminal charges for abuse. The 62-page report was authored by Merrick Bob, the Board of Supervisors Special Counsel. Bob concludes that the former sheriff and his chief assistant allowed and possibly promoted violence. Since December 20th, sheriff's officials have been charged for various crimes, including attacking inmates and jail visitors. On Sunday, scientists at the Stockholm Environmental Institute published a study declaring the proposed Keystone XL pipeline could increase carbon dioxide emissions 4 times higher than estimated by the State Department. The study was published in the journal Nature Climate Change. Lead author Pete Erickson and his team say the government failed to account for increased consumption of oil as a result of expected price drops. The American Petroleum Institute said the study was irrelevant because the tar sands would be developed with or without the pipeline. Well, this weekend, Adam Kokesh will keynote the second annual Freedom and Unity Festival held in Vermont. Organizers have encouraged attendees to arrive Friday night and enjoy a relaxed evening in like-minded company. Saturday will feature live music and a variety of speakers and workshops. Pre-register if you're interested in a music workshop with renowned musician Jordan Page. Bardo Farms will serve one of their famous pig roasts. Organized events begin at 9 o'clock on Saturday, August 16th at Magic Mountain in southern Vermont. The event is pet-friendly. Learn more at VermontersForLiberty.org. Support for the Liberty Beat comes from the Corey Moore Show, live each Friday night, 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Eastern. Listen live at CoreyMoreShow.com and LRN.FM. This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, August 11th, 2014. I'm Brian Hagan, reporting. Reminding you, spread liberty with a smile.
Frustrated Superman fans told reporters Monday that the economically healthy and financially stable Daily Planet newspaper is now the most unrealistic aspect of the comic book's universe, acknowledging that enjoying the adventures of a superhero that can fly, lift cars over his head, and shoot beams of light out of his eyes requires some suspension of disbelief. Longtime readers said even the comic's most exciting stories are regularly ruined by the implausibility of a thriving daily newspaper whose advertising revenue and circulation numbers have not at all been threatened by a media landscape overtaken by laptops, smartphones, and aggregation websites.
Look, I can play along with Superman using his breath to freeze a volcano or clapping his hands together to cause some sort of sonic boom, but seeing images of a thriving Daily Planet newsroom not facing layoffs or dwindling home subscriptions just really takes me out of the story. No one in Metropolis has realized they could get news online faster and for free.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Oh, it's an activist newspaper. You know, this is just sent to me by Frank Tambury, Frank Tambury's dad. And the Carbon County Independent Gazette, 24-page, with some color in it, and did. We were talking about this. I said, you know what you could do? Well, he did it. You know, he's like, yep, here we go. I like this format. We, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's maybe the way we do it. You know, this is, and he sent the first two editions. He goes, Ernie, I wanted you to have the first two editions that we did, and they're doing some butt whipping. It all started with some school board kind of spending money they shouldn't money kind of stuff. Okay? So he says, hello, Ernie. I hope you and Donna are well. Dave and I are still at it fighting the fight. Now, Dave was his neighbor, partner, and they're out there, you know, doing some butt whipping. Since our visit, Dave has started videoing school board meetings and putting clips out to our base via YouTube.
A petition was signed over 900 strong against a new school and 15 for the school. 900 versus 15. Okay. This was not accepted, and the board majority voted to have the architect start plans for a new elementary school. A monthly paper, the Independent Gazette, has been created by Dave and I, and I wanted to share the first two copies with you. We will keep you informed as we go along. Thank you again for your insight and thoughts and the time you offered us, Frank Tamburi. And they went at this is, see, this is exactly what I'm hoping will happen. We create the template, have all kinds of great, and then they just insert, you know, local story, Dela, whatever, right here. This is, I've been holding off because I wanted to make sure we included the Made Safe stuff. And we have, I think we're ready to go. So we're going to go ahead and, you know, because I said, you know, by the end of summer 2014, which really means, you know, Labor Day, you know, you get by Labor Day and you're ready to go. So Donna and I have been doing, you know, like today we took off last few days, to, you know, the just chill. And I wanted to, there's a lot to be done. And we did a lot of work in the last week getting ready for this week. And one of the things is the funding center. Now, we're kind of through beta. Now, we took it off of the top of Freedom. It's over on the left side. You go Freedom's Phoenix, and you'll see Funding Center Marketplace over there. We keep adding, you know, different items and people and funding, and kind of we're, you know, getting it going. And we have, you know, there's quite a bit of money been raised. I mean, you know, it's, you know, there's, you know, some people, you know, support some Freedom projects. So that was the point that we had, and there's nothing to stop. They can't come after me. There's no bank account. There's no, you know, escrow. There's no delayed credit card charging funding kind of, no, it's not like that. It's just, here's a good, I endorse this idea, and they're in peace. You know, go give money. So we're going to do that with Richard. Donna's going to turn that on today. We already have it all set up. You know, Donna, go ahead and tell me about that. You know, what is it that you had to do? What do you got ready to go? I hadn't even looked at it.
Well, it's not super ready to go. A couple weeks ago when we had Richard Grove on, you told me to go ahead and open up a funding center project, which I did, which consists of making kind of like a shop front. It is not live yet. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So I created that, and there were some instructions that I put in the template for Richard to do. Now, he said he was going to be busy for the next couple of weeks, and I believe he just took a look at it yesterday, but he hasn't updated anything. It doesn't take long to update the information they need. They just need to have the content. And I think today they're going to be making the FAQ video, the frequently asked question video, and hopefully we'll have that up and linked today or hopefully tomorrow.
Well, he's the man if he can get it done in one day and, you know, the just button, you know, because what he communicated was that he's been working with Will, and they got him convinced that, yes, they can do this Bitcoin thing and satisfy a lot of his questions. Well, we're going to find out. Because that's a big plum for them. I mean, if they get Richard on board on this, it's like, ooh, here we go. So I'm looking forward to that. We can see, we'll see what happens, because if he can be convinced and he can demonstrate that this works and it's outside of the man, well, crap, man, that's all they needed. It'll go stupid. So it's in everybody's interest that this works. So we wanted to get the right people in at the highest level to understand what the hell is going on. Now, Will Pangman, we had him on. He was recommended to us by Blake Anderson. Now, you know, Blake, as we were communicating with him this weekend, you know, just, you know, what's up? And I can see Will was the liaison or the chief promotional PR guy for the Bitcoin Foundation in, you know, trying to promote Bitcoin as a currency, as a thing, you know, to promote it to, you know, grandma and grandpa. Well, he kind of like, nah, this is not, I'm done with these guys. So I think he went in with the right intentions, but he just, yeah, no, they're going down the dark path. And certainly with the New York thing, that kind of proved that. So if he can help, you know, do what his mission was, is to help people understand how it can be used for things like Tragedy and Hope, because I immediately saw what could be done. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, really pimping this because I could see someone that was critical of it for the right reasons, but was Bitcoin able to answer those questions? Was it able to bypass? Was it able to? We're going to find out. If they can convince Richard and demonstrate that this works the way it was promised and intended, you know, a system is reaching perfection just in time for our disappearance. Let there be dark. Okay. And while they're doing that, we can make fun of them with bit licenses from Bitcoin, not bombs. See, it's a psyop. You know, plus, you know, it has to work. So Donna's set it all up, got it ready. So this week, we're going to be, you know, go give a little bit of Bitcoin, kind of just something, show support up. Because even if they go after, I don't even know what they, them, those won't leave us alone might do. But it doesn't matter because the history behind Richard Grove and all the information he has on tragedy and hope demonstrates the reason why you need Bitcoin, why you need Made Safe, who these people are at the highest levels, and their history that goes back generations. It is, I already see where this goes. The more they tighten their fist, the more star systems that will escape between their fingers. I see this happening. So Donna's working on that. So what else you got working on over there?
Well, I was just updating the safe and the Huria Phoenix, trying to keep up with those. A lot of stuff going on in the Middle East. And I have purposely not read a lot of it. I just know that a lot of things going on with Israel and Gaza and all that.
Well, this is what, you know, when you say you update SAFE and Huria, you know, tell people what that means.
We have, on Freedom's Phoenix, we have several, many special editions. The SAFE page has the Second Amendment is for everyone. It's a lot of things that have, everything that has to do with the guns and gun rights and all of that information. And Huria Phoenix has to do with Middle Eastern, stories. So what I do, I take the front.
Huria Phoenix is Arabic for Freedom's Phoenix.
Freedom's
so
Phoenix.
We have an Arabic Facebook and an Arabic Twitter page. And what Donna does is she takes all the stuff that has anything to do with the Middle East, you know, and Islamic countries or Arabic countries or Africa or the Middle East or, you know, whatever that would be of interest to people there, because it started during Arab Spring. And it just went, ooh, man, we got some attention during that. There was some hacking going on. They want to come after, and it goes back to Israel. Okay, so we said, okay, you guys want to play? Let's play. So we learned a lot from these kind of different various attacks that, you know, it's kind of, you know, made it to where now we're vulnerable, but we have a lot more security, and we understand in the future from these kinds of things. And what happened was Huria Phoenix was the ability with a translator that we can have Freedom's Phoenix translated to Arabic, and it goes, and Donna does that. Tell them the process when you do that. When we come back,
it's lengthy.
When we come back. You know, see, how does Freedom's Phoenix take and translate into Arabic and then have an Arabic Facebook and an Arabic Twitter? How does that even happen? Our Arabic Twitter was shut down. Within 3 weeks, we had thousands of people join me. Boom, and they shut it down. I go, yes! If you're not, you know, coming to their attention, you're doing it wrong. So we started another one, and we're still up. We'll explain.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat Liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Okay, I just got off the phone with Richard. you know, as a music starting, you know, and I go, all right, so what we, he goes, hey, man, I was on vacation, we got, kind of, I told you it was going to be the day that we did, and kind of we're starting, and he's on it. So this is what they're going to do. It'll be, hopefully, by Thursday, Friday, we'll go ahead and have, because we had planned on going and having them working on it today and tomorrow, and then by the end of the week, we'll go ahead and launch this thing. I'm not going to rush it. We want to make sure we get a good launch, and, you know, everybody knows what's going on. But after talking to Will Pangman, he's feeling a lot better, and it kind of the way he put it, he goes, hey man, you know, I get to play at the casino here, but I want to see how it goes. You know, this is to make sure this is all working out. So Donna's got it started. Everything's sitting, you know, I'm ready to go. And this is a good demonstration, because I think what's going to happen, from my perspective, I don't know if everybody gets the same perspective, but from my perspective, this is the answer to them trying to control Bitcoin, you know, or with a PSYOP. I go, okay, you want to play PSYOP? I give you Tragedy and Hope. There's our PSYOP. Here we go. Now, the MadeSafe protocol, they're coming out. This is another mechanism, but there's so many things going on. By the end of this year, you know, is it going to, you know, all come to a head before the election? Is it going to be after? Is anybody going to be paying attention? So we're already going in this 2016 thing, and there's not a whole lot of big giant revolutionary support for Rand Paul. I'm not sure there ever will be, or, you know, Gary Johnson suing to be in, you know, the debates, and they're going through all that, and you're still voting. So where is the real change? It's all culture thing. That's just a side effect of it. Well, in this culture, all the stuff that we do, all the activism, all the people that we bring together, that's the main thing that Donna and I have had our experience with, is just being open with our lives and trying to include others, and you should meet and talk to, and, you know, and go off and, like, you know, make us free in peace, you know. And there's so many of these relationships that we have and people that we coordinate with and work with, and they, and, you know, I don't want to be working with Ernie anymore. I want to work over here. Good. You know, I got other stuff to do. But, you know, it's, I'm glad that people remain friends with us, friendly, keep up with us. You know, I get newspapers sent to me by them. You know, they get inspired by something, boom, and they go do it. Yes, that was the point. Because we can't do it ourselves. We can't. But we can inspire. We can connect. We can have a philosophy behind it. That's why I had such a quick bonding with David Irvine, because I understood that he was of the right age and the experience to understand the importance of what he was doing. Richard and Lisa have been really, or Tragedy and Hope, have been able to bring a perspective and all the information and make it accessible to people, and their, the brain software that they use, and the connections, and the 20-hour, you know, podcast of I got nothing to do on my trek across the country, I'm listening to kind of I learned something thing, you know, and I didn't have to read. So this is just an awesome material, and when it becomes, and it will come to the attention of they, them, those, and certainly in the Bitcoin community, and they see what they have to offer over there, not only do I think there's already enough support, there's going to be some financial, you know, it's like a yardstick, you know, it's like, and we raised this much, why? Because we can, because they supported and we did, and bite me. This is it. But even when it starts to get more notoriety, people start to see what's going on. Why did they? Who are these people? What? And they look and they go, oh. And it's not in the form of, you know, like, you know, God bless, you know, Alex Jones, man. I'm glad he's one less thing I got to do, the megaphone. I can go out there and give it what for, but you can't be on high alert all the time. I mean, it's not necessary. I just need the information. I don't need it, you know, just boom, you know, it's like watching the intro to Fox News all the time or something, you know, high alert, terror this, red, you know, graphics of blood dripping kind of bombs and stuff. You know, I just think, whoa. And certainly females. I mean, that's one thing I can see. They don't respond to that. You know, they just kind of, you know, get the real human story of this. So that's where I get back to Donna. 30 years. We've been married, which means we've known each other. We started dating a couple of years before that. So, you know, for 30 years, and we've evolved into what the team that we are. And even whenever I got, you know, work for corporations and so on, I always made it clear. This was an interesting thing I'd always tell them. I go, they were hiring the team. And there was, I would even get criticized a lot. I'd have you go get stuff or do stuff. Well, was that on for the company? I go, yes. Well, does she need, we need to hire her? Can you kind of, and in fact, they, that's how I remember when I was managing Pizza Huts back in, you're young, that's how you got on the payroll that one time. They wanted me to hire you as an hourly employee in case you got in a wreck or something. I remember that. I bet you don't even remember that.
I do not even remember that.
I remember that. They were, she was doing so much work and getting, doing and increasing my capacity that they're like, you know, we're not comfortable with this. I go, well, you hired the team. Get over it. You know, and the corporation said, tell you what, why don't you just make her an hourly employee? Just, you know, charge a couple hours that they're, because we'll feel better about it. And I go, okay. You know, so that's, I think that's how that happened. And then they put you at another store, you know, because they didn't want the same.
It was a vague memory, but yeah, I don't remember the whole thing.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah. But they, but it's always been that they hired, because I used to manage restaurants. That's what I do. When I got burned, we had our own company. And when I got burned, you know, I couldn't, you know, because I was healing. I was, you know, my skin was, you know, fragile and stuff. I couldn't do the chemicals and everything. So then we went ahead and I started working for Pizza Hut as a general manager right off the bat, because I had experience before and I was older. And they just, you know, 3 weeks of training and now you're general manager. So we did that. And then it was, I've been out of corporate life for several years, a decade or so. And I go, wow, this is so bad. That it was all, wow, you guys just wait right there. I'm going to go open my own pizza restaurant. And we did. Now, the thing was, is that during that process, I'll tell you what we found out. It was management by Wall Street. And what they did is I was, you know, training all these people. They come in with degrees and they would hire. Anybody had to go to these job fairs, hired. You're hired. Oh, they feel, oh, the big Pillsbury Corporation, you know, for like, you know, Burger King back in the early days. And then, you know, we were Domino's there for a while when we first met. And then in the 80s. And then I, you know, we went on the Pizza Hut. And, you know, I'm going, okay, I could see what they were doing. It looked better on their perspective, their spreadsheets of corporate, whatever the hell, that when they would do their stock off, the stock valuations were based on how many, what percentage in management had a degree. Competency had absolutely nothing to do with it. No matter, I was top of all kinds of different criteria. Oh, the top increased over year sale. All the top in customers. All the top in everything. Yeah, but he didn't have a degree. And I'm going, you know, seriously, this is our criteria? So I understood what the weakness was. It was all paper. It was never accomplishment or a meritocracy. They say America is a meritocracy, but it's not really. It's who has the license or the piece of paper.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Singing in public.
You know, I do it all the time. All right. Now, this is we're showing you right now the, this is the view of our aquadome, part of the aquadome. There's a double, don't want to see. We don't have that camera. I got four cameras. I just have the two on. We came back from Jackalope and half our fish were dead. And it was because our daughter, you know, didn't know that when she unplugged, you know, something for the lights in the back, she also unplugged the pump. And again, we're going, you know what? We need to back up. We still got a lot of fish in there, but I, you know, damn it. It was the big ones, you know, that didn't make it. And we lost probably at least 30 or something. We had like 150 in there, 130 something. And then when a bunch of babies started coming, I bet they were the breeders.
I don't know. There are still babies in there, amazingly enough. But
you know what we did?
Cream of the crop.
We Darwinized them. You know, the best survive and thrive and reproduce.
That's for sure.
Okay, so that's what we're doing. But the dome really, it gave us another, you know, two is one is none kind of thing. To have one main pump that did the whole thing. I go, you know what? And that what we did, I tell you what the problem was. We took the Hope system with us. You know, it has the battery backup with the solar panels and all. We unplugged that and took it with us for the, you know, so Donna could have powered hot showers. Mm-hmm. So really it was.
And you too. It was nice.
Yeah, but no, it was all your fault. That you killed all the fish. It's all your
yes,
fault.
Yes, it is my fault because I did not inform my daughter about that plug.
No, because you had to have hot showers. It's all you, baby.
Yes. No, always been
that's
my fault.
Right. That's all right. Can I massage it into where it's not my fault?
Yes, you can.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, what we learned from, I'm like, it's no big deal. One thing we learned is to have more than one mechanism and to have the solar backup. Because when we put it on the electric, you know, we just didn't tell Sierra that, you know, don't unplug that, you know. Well, the power strip to do the lights in the back, she wanted to just turn them off. Well, it turned off the pump. Well, she didn't realize, and then she left, and then all of a sudden, man, it went green really fast. And they just died of starvation of air or something. I don't know what it was. So anyway, so we saved them. We put in, we went, you know, they were dying right when we got here.
Mm-hmm.
We were seeing them. They're like, you didn't make it in time, you know. And we're like, damn, man. So we saved, probably two-thirds of them. But the point is that we learned something. Now, you got to have the backup. And solar is better than not, you know, that just have it's always running. It has a backup. It never, you know, goes off. And it just, you know, we got sun. So I'm going, okay, so we're good. Hope system, what did we do? We took out the Hope system. That was a bad idea. But so that's one thing that we're learning there. And that's another thing that I wanted to talk about. But first, let's give Donna an opportunity to share. You know, this is the role of just being like Ernie's wife is not really your role. I mean, a lot of people that know us know that you're really the one that does everything. You know, keeps everything going.
Well, I do a lot of work, but I'll be honest, I'm not the brains behind any of this. I do, now you do allow me to offer my suggestions, and you do take those into consideration. It doesn't mean that you use them all the time. So I always have my flavor in there. But, you know, I've learned. I wasn't in management. I had no management skills when we were first married. So I've sort of learned by osmosis. And so I hate to say this, but a bigger asset, I guess, to you.
Ooh,
now.
Yeah, you are an asset. Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, very important. The one thing was that we had, you became a real estate agent, and that was at my insistence. I mean, she was like, I don't know. I go, no. And you can always be here in the restaurant and complain about me telling, well, you're always, I go, yeah, well, there's a cure for that. You know, go do something else.
Yeah, well, I knew that once I got my real estate license, I would be doing both. It wasn't like I was going to be able to just walk away from the restaurant. But I like real estate.
You did, a lot of real estate. I mean,
I did.
Heck, your first sale, you had like a $35,000 commission.
Yes, I mean, did. I need another one of those. By the way.
Really. So you know, that was, you know, like, you know, hello. All of a sudden, yeah, you know, I'm done. And she bought me a car. She goes, and I get a nice car. Yay! Now, what happened was that the reason I was so insistent was because I just knew Donna was conscientious. She was pleasant to be around. I get to drive around looking at, you know, homes and stuff with Donna. I vote that. Now, what I added to it was my knowledge of Arizona. You know, when somebody would come in, a lot of it were libertarians from out of state, and they go, hey, you know, where should I, you know, I'll tell you what. I ask us a few questions. I knew exactly what areas they should be looking at, what features they wanted. I mean, things like, I want a shooting range. I want to be able to launch my model rockets. I want to have my own airport. I want to be able to have horses. I want to be able to grow this, do that. Where's the wells? Kind of, I mean, on and on and on. I go, and you're thinking, looking there, you don't want to go there. You want to go here. And you go there. Donna would go find it. And they go, ding, wow, awesome, because I know the area. And the thing is, and we're looking for a place too. And I think we're going to start getting really serious, and we keep looking at different things, and there's so many things that go into it. And I tell you, the main factor is access to our grandchildren. We don't want to be so far away that we can't see them on a regular basis. That's what this whole thing is about.
Our granddaughter, Kaylee, started her first week of kindergarten. She's only four. I mean, she turns five like next week or something. And she's, I guess, starting a year early. She should have started another year. I think she should start another year. Because we started Rhea, our oldest, early a year because she was smart enough. But that it's better to have them older than younger. But, I mean, she's definitely intellectually there. And she's, you know, I'm sure teacher's pet already. But, you know, her first week or, you know, last couple of days, some little boy likes her or something. He's throwing dirt on her on the playground at recess and, you know, like, hitting her in class and, you know, kind of. And she's got enough self-esteem for us and kind of we expected, you know, now watch, you know, this is going to happen. Somebody's going to, you know, and you got to, you know, it's not you. And we kind of prepared her for this government school environment thing. So she likes school. She's kind of cool. But it wasn't perfect. You know, and that just grates me. Oh, and for the pleasure, they get to say, I pledge allegiance. Merca. Heck, she just barely got this eye thing down, much less a allegiance to something other than mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. I'm like, you know, it just grates me nothing. I mean, I'm thinking the next time the big motivation for me run for office is I'll run on one thing. I just want to ask one question. Why are my kindergarten grandchildren pledging allegiance to anything? I mean, I just asked that question. I just want to know why. I mean, what would be the answer? I mean, what do you think the candidate? Well, because why?
Patriotic and all the usual crap that goes along with it, but it is
programming.
What
does that mean?
I don't know.
It's just brainwashing.
It's programming. Programming. Yeah.
Program. And we deprogram. And we did with our kids, too. They went to private school, but we still had to do deprogram with that because they had the recruiters come in and tell you how great and wonderful and you got to go kill Muslims or something. And I'm going, wow, this is...
You know, you don't really have to say anything. You just don't... If you're in a group of people or in any situation, you just don't stand up and say it when they start to do it. And then they look at you and then they start asking questions and then, you know, then they think about it, because I know several people, like our son-in-law, he's like, I don't stand up anymore. He's like, he thought about it, and he's like, I don't pledge.
Yeah, he goes to different meetings and stuff. He's the only one sitting there, and he goes, hey, man, I'm not pledging to an idolatry, because he's a good Christian. His father's a pastor, so he definitely has got that going for him. He's like, hey, you want to talk about this? More than happy to explain it to you.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, he just learned by example.
Ooh, listen. Super Bowl's coming, NFL.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to stand up against empire, sometimes you just got to sit down. So when they do the Star Spangled whatever, and they're all their patriot kind of, you know, how big's our flag on the field crap, you know, I'm just like, we do that campaign. Effective or not, it's just going to, they won't know what'll happen. They'll go, see, everybody stood up. And we're going, see, we made you worry about it. that's just the way we roll. All right, well, more with Donna. Donna, I'll even let her talk when we come back. You know, if I can goad her into it.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Do it. You know, I used to get yelled at when I was doing with network. I mean, the local Terran radio here, a morning show, and I'd sing it, and the board op go, "Hey, you're not supposed to do that." You know, I'm like, "Do what?
Well, say, I go, is there a rule somewhere? Where's that rule? You know? And they're like, all right, whatever. I get to do it because I can. Nah, 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 nah. Okay, now, the one thing that I wanted to make sure, you know, Donna got to express herself, the motivation for, you know, you participating, because there has to be a little bit of enthusiasm. There has to be a little, I mean, there's a lot of hard work that you do and a lot of things behind the scenes, because a lot of it, it's like I always have throughout our marriage, 30 years we've been married, known each other now 32 years, a couple of years, so I'm, you know, long time, decades, and she's still so hot. But the you know, the thing is that I'm able to replicate myself in, you know, a lot of different ways, because as I can think of something, I go, wow, that needs, and so many times stuff just doesn't get done because I'm off on the other things that, you know, this needs to be done, but then I'm not thinking about the other stuff that needs to do the dovetail into that, and I need you to do this while I'm working on it. And Donna's really been good at that. The problem is that, you know, I didn't think that she really had a full understanding or grasping of why. But after a few decades, all of a sudden, it's all started to come together, because we've been activists since, you know, we had Sierra when she was a baby, before she was even born, you know. So it was, you know, we were young and I could see what was coming. I remember us having conversations, and it was between our birthdays in March. Hers is the 20th of March. Yeah.
Yeah.
20th of March, mine's the 29th. And in between there, we, you know, because we're poor, we're out in the desert flying kites, drinking Rio Nitti and kind of eating cheese and chilling. And I remember going, this is bad. It was 88, 89. And I go, I don't think you understand what I see is coming. This is really, I got a peek behind the curtain, you know, kind of like a Richard Grove thing, you know, read the right book. But I was I'm looking at these people, like when I was at the New York Bitcoin Conference, the way they look at you, and you see, I'm going, oh, I get it. You're like the bad guys in all the novels, man. I mean, all the everything. Ew, I can see behind those. I understand. They believe they have a right to rule you, and you're too stupid, and you're going to let them. And they had the evil intent of, you're just sheep. And I'm going, okay. So when I saw legislation stuff that was happening, I explained to Don, I go, this is a lifetime thing. Can you give me 10 years? Do you remember that?
I do.
You know, what was your experience of that? How did you see that?
Well, I mean, I didn't have the same foreknowledge you did, but I knew you were smart and you were pretty passionate about it, and so I agreed. And
she totally agreed.
I totally agreed, and it was a roller coaster. But I learned a lot. Good things and bad things, but you know, about how the way the world works and everything. So it kind of set the stage for all this. You know, when Ron Paul decided to run, fortunately, I had already been brought up to speed on everything. So I was able to, you know, I didn't do a lot of the, I mean, I did a lot of the activism, but I was a lot of the stuff behind the scene. But I mean, that was my role to play in all of this. I have absolutely, like, we have a friend who, his wife wasn't really active in a lot of things, but she understood as well. And her job was to go to work so he could go out and do the activism. And that's kind of what I did. I did a lot of the behind the scenes things, making sure you were traveling all the time and going to different places. And so I was mailing out signs and making sure you had everything packed. And
well,
I mean,
it was Ron Paul that really got you. I mean, because we had Freedom's Phoenix for years and you hardly ever even looked at it.
I did, but I mean, I was busy. I was doing real estate at the time, running back and forth, and the kids were still in high school. I mean, I was busy, so I didn't have time to constantly read it, but you know, but once I did get on it, it was really hard to get off. Reading an encyclopedia. You just go from one thing to the next thing to the next thing.
I know. It's like when you look up something in encyclopedia and, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, you forgot what you're even looking for.
When they were in books. I mean, they still are. But I mean, back when they had books only, you just keep going. But
well, this is, you know, Freedom's Phoenix. I think it was Dr. Paul cured your apathy.
Well, I was already there, but it was good that I had that preparation so that we could just go out and do what we needed to do, and that my role was behind the scenes, yours was out there.
Well, anybody that knows us that comes here, they're like, Ernie, you need to be nicer to Donna.
This is true.
Yeah, you need to. I'm like, you know, because she'll go, well, I don't want to talk about it. Just do it. You know, later we can do it kind of, heck, you just even asked me, I already forgot what I was going to do the next thing. I'm like, you know, ding, ding, because my mind is, I tell you this is what happened.
yesterday, Donna decided that we, you know, I'm like, you know, what do you get? We do a lot of things. You know, biggest thing that Donna wants for her anniversary is just not to do anything. She goes, I want the weekend off. I started talking about stuff Saturday morning or Sunday morning as we were eating breakfast outside, and I'm going, she goes, oh, I wanted it was one weekend and you're not talking about it. I go, okay. So the next day is, we went and got a massage. You know, did a, they have like a couple massage thing, you know, at Massage Envy. So we go and do that. And I didn't really realize how much tension there was until she got to my neck. And then she goes, wow, you got it. I'm going, yeah. Because she goes, well, what do you do? I go, I think. I'm just constantly thinking. And she was a good masseuse. Thank you. And but still not as good as Sierra. I mean, is Sierra the woman or what?
She's the best.
I mean, seriously, I'm not just because she's my daughter. I mean, that girl, because it's like our kids. They always put everything, I mean, into understanding every bit of anatomy to kind of work and scientific made down and down better now. And she was so awesome. And then, you know, she got impregnated to the point where she can't, like, even go up to the tape. She can't do it anymore. You know, so she's going to have a baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is pretty soon.
Yeah, anytime.
Well, anytime.
I mean, it could be anytime now. I mean, her due date is September 6th, but it literally
could be. So we're within a few weeks.
We're in a few weeks, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but the first one, usually, does it go early or late?
I don't know. It just depends. I don't know. When they come out. When they're ready.
This is what I know. When the baby drops, then they get kind of a reprieve. They get it's more comfortable, you know, because the head goes down and it kind of, you know, it's got more room. And that's how it winds up getting stuck that way, is because that's just the only way you can find room. So it gets down there, and usually unless it's breech, all this other stuff. So they the baby gets more room, and then there's a time when the mom always goes, get it out, I can't stand. I go, oh, I know what that means. It means you got 2 weeks.
No, another month. Well, she's been at that stage for a few weeks. She goes, I can't believe there's any more room in here. I go, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Baby hasn't dropped yet.
No, she has a little more room, and then it's like, 2 weeks.
The baby's face down, and the feet are in her ribs, and so she's mild. Uncomfortable at this
kick
point.
Kick,
yes.
Kick,
pushing.
Kick.
Stretching.
Well, so this is how our awesome. Oh, and Kellen Troy, warrior. Mm-hmm. Kellen Troy, Rhea's second child, they had a boy. And he's such a good baby.
He's a very good baby. They got very lucky. They have two very good kids.
Well, you know, and Elin, you know, she loves her little brother, man. She helps him play, and he's entertained a lot, and the dogs and everything. He makes eye contact in the first month. He was like, ew, and I get him to smile and everything. So he's awesome. He's going to see your parents. They're going to go back, visit his family and your parents, and, you know, and they get another great baby. So we're doing well, and that's kind of... And we'll go into a little extra in the archive in here because we want to explain, you know, to our listeners and fans and so on that what we're going to be doing. And I think we're focused on, one, do we go out of country? Do we stay here? Do we fight or whatever? I don't want to fight. If I got to fight, I'm just wasting time. I got grandkids to raise, you know. And but I think we're keep looking for land, but we want to have the desert for growing seasons. I mean, you know, it's like a year-round thing, because that's what all this, you know, Aquadome and all of the articles in the magazine and us, you know, following us doing our different food production and the chicken thing and all this other stuff has been in preparation for us being able to survive and thrive without being on the grid and the energy thing and communication things and the satellite and made say all this stuff has come together to allow us to do what we do autonomously out in the lone prairie, leave me aloneism. And of course they, you know, they're not going to leave you alone, you know, but I mean, as much as we can and demonstrate that. So I'm kind of excited about that opportunity. We're looking for the land and stuff. I mean, you know, it's this week we're going to start putting a little bit extra effort on that. And there may be within not too long from now, there might be some people want to go, hey, we'll go out there and hip y'all or buy the property next door or something like that. And are you excited about me? Is that on your radar screen?
Yeah, it's another part of our life that we're looking forward to. So.
Yeah, 30 years. Now we can, you know, next 30, doing what? Be good grandma, grandpa. Great grandma, grandpa. We're already thinking great grandkids. So we're healthy. You know, we're feeling pretty good. We're eating right. You know, need to do more exercise stuff. That's what living out on the farm is going to do for you. You know, all this has been in preparation for us to be able to just think, you know, and plan. And I see what it is. It's culture. And thanks to our friends and listeners and supporters for all that they've done to inspire us.
The warning sign.
Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about, you know, just take a little bit and without interruption. What is it that we're looking to do? I mean, what do you think would be, you know, yay?
Survive and be an asset to our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah, I want
to. I'm not looking to poke anybody. And, you know, I'd like
to
just
thrive.
I would like to be just left alone. You know, I'm sure that for the most part we will be, but I know that the time will come when they go, oh, you need a permit or you need this or you need. And we'll
sign here. You totally
we'll see.
Agree.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to expect out there. We're just going to do what we've always done, and it's, you know, we'll probably still be, we're going to have the web page, and we'll still be in a mindset that we're going to help people. You know, I mean, if you want to come here and learn this and do whatever, stay for a couple of days, we're still going to do that. We've always had our house open for everybody. I don't think we know how else to live, because if we just, you know what I mean? If we just, okay, we're just going and we're going to be little hermits and that's it. We don't really know how to live that way.
Well, it's a decision that we made a long time ago. So many people have been so supportive of us over the years, you know, that we want to be that same kind of pay it forward thing. But it's more than that. It's our, I mean, a lot of people you get upset. Well, I, and you made me work for, and I got an ew. And I go, yeah, you know, there's not, you know, it's not a freebie. You don't, you're not owed anything. You know, I'm not going to, you know, you come and we'll trade out. I mean, I'd, you know, make sure you don't starve and you got like a place to stay for a certain amount of time in exchange for do something. I mean, you know, it's, I don't mind doing that. But the problem is when you start doing property or land and somebody comes and they squat, it's kind of like this Airbnb or something, you know, like a, and they squat, and I'm not leaving. Oh, yeah? I don't see how libertarians have a problem with that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. and you're gone. Mm-hmm. But the how do we do that? Do we make it like a camping thing? You get 2 weeks and you're done. Is it a month, you know, shared whatever? You build, you get, you learn, you something. I mean, do we make it a working thing? Is it a farm? Is it, you know, because we want at least 5-10 acres minimum. And because really that's for us to distribute to our kids. We build up something nice and we can leave that to have some value. I mean, you know, it just, I just want to, you know, cut our bills because we spend way too much money. I mean, it's on so much stuff, and it's to help. And it's got to the point to where it had an enormous amount of return, you know, for we could see it out there, you know, stuff happening. But it's getting to the point that, you know, we don't have to do that anymore. I think I was always so worried about keeping my finger on the button, because if somebody wasn't pushing the button would get pushed. You know, it wasn't making progress. Well, now I don't feel that I have. There's a whole bunch of button pushers out there. And the only thing is that they're not as focused on the distributed, the no force, the no collectivized my way kind of, you know, something, instead of focusing on a cultural shift with everybody just takes care of themselves and then voluntary temporary alliances. They always want to create an organization. They always want to have a big, you know, voting block. They want to have, you know, some kind of, you know, Steiger's Law thing. You know, it always turns into the group was more important than whatever reason they created it. So I keep trying to emphasize that. Once that concept starts to really take off, which is what Made Safe and Bitcoin, all this other stuff kind of helps create. Once that gets instilled, then I'm not as concerned. That was the cultural shift that I was going for. And you got to keep in mind, you remember when we first started doing this, everybody wanted me to be part of their club. Everybody wanted us to work for the collective of we know how to rule better than the other person. Everybody wants us to be in the party and doing and supporting the way they want us to. Well, you could be elected and head of the whatever if. And I'm like, that if was always the reason why I didn't want to do it. So we never, when was the last time, did we ever run to win, you know, some election or anything?
Not that I can remember, but
but we work hard,
but,
though.
But I guess the win is, we did, I guess, but you have to think of what the win is. For us, the win was the culture shift.
Yeah, and it always is like that. And it had a long-term effect, you know, even on our kids' friends. They're in junior high and high school and everything. I mean, when we dropped the kids off at Phoenix Christian Junior Senior High, what was the bumper sticker everywhere?
Bush. A lot of Bush. I don't think I ever saw any. I don't even remember who was running back then. But I mean, just,
Bush.
It was
Republican.
All Bush. Yeah.
Bush.
It was during that
Bush.
Time.
Mm-hmm. Then I've got Bush. www.warmonger.com.
We had an influence on people. I mean, some we didn't. Some we did. I mean, at least got them to open their eyes.
You know, they always, you remember, you know, especially our son's friends, they'd always, you know, want to discuss politics or something. So what did our boys do?
Beat them.
Beat the crap out of them. It was amazing. They'd dive over.
Pound on them.
Yeah, I mean, they'd ask me a question. Mr. Hancock, what do you think? All of a sudden, one of my sons or both of them come diving through the air over the coffee table under the couch and just start pounding the crap out of them. And never ask my dad a question.
You know? That's typical high school boy behavior, though. So it wasn't like.
I know. It was kind of funny. But, you know, they wanted to make a point. But then they'd go off and they'd be out in the computer room, you know, all the kids. Because we had teenage boys and girls. So all their friends, and we were close to the school. So we were like the house, you know. So, and we didn't have a big house. We had a small house. But man, if it wasn't saturated, there was definitely over at the
Hancock. Had a lot of charisma over there.
Oh, yeah. There was estrogen, testosterone dripping off the walls for freaking years. And what happened then was the... when they were off doing whatever, one of them kind of sneaked back out wherever I was doing something, or I'm on my computer, and they go, hey, what? And then all of a sudden, another one would come. Then, oh, they're back in here. Then the boys come back in and start pounding on people again, you know.
That was funny. I remember that.
So it was, and then at Friday night, it would be football night, and our kids played football, and then the cheerleaders, and so they're all over. And then the next morning, you know, which the other thing, you had to sleep in the hallway. That was a whole other deal. You know, kind of, now, and their separation. Oh, they're good little Christian kids. You know, Ernie, you don't have to. I'm like, what planet are you on? Seriously, I mean, did you or did you not say that to me?
I'm sure I did, yeah. No, it was, yeah, we had half our kids drinking and the other half playing online poker and stuff.
And Donica, like, she wakes me up. She goes, honey, there. And I'm like, I look at her like, you know, duh. You know, all right, everybody give me your keys. You know, the numbers are paying. Nobody drives. Got, you know, don't bob them in the morning. You know, and then we dealt with it. No big deal. But what happened was during that time, there was an understanding that our family started. I knew the power of females. And I go, look, you're not allowed to use your witchcraft in my house. And I knew what it was. You know, some of the girls are like, oh, and then you squeeze a little shoulder. You know, heck, a girl touch a teenage boy, and man, it's on. You know, I'm just going, no, 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 no witchcraft in my house. I just knew better. Donna's like, what's the big deal? I go, oh, you were never a teenage boy.
No, I wasn't.
It's hard to explain to women this testosterone thing and the difference between what kind of strength?
Man strength.
When the testosterone hits, all of a sudden, it's a total nother category. I go, we got forklifts over here that we can use now, you know, so lift that bale, tote that barge. But they were busy enough, and especially with the restaurant and everything, they worked really hard. They got paid, we didn't pay everything we were supposed to, but, you know, they got paid. You know, they got what they were supposed to, let's put it that way. And, so our life has been an open book. Our children got, and they, what do you think now? Do you think they appreciate us more now, or is it starting to get to that level yet?
In some ways they do. In other ways, they still kind of hold on to all the work they had to do. But it's not as much of a grudge now that they're raising their own children and they see, you know, what they're making their kids do. You know, they're not allowed to be bumps on logs either, so...
Well, you know what happened? I remember when they were in high school and you know, we were the poor kids, okay? You know, which they had a lot of respect for. We worked hard and they knew and kind of, you know, but we weren't, you know, handing our hand-me-down BMW and Hummers to our kids at 16. I mean, you know, that's what was going on. And their friends, oh, we're going on vacation. They go on cruises. They go on all kinds of outings. They'd be on their big yacht, boat, plane crap, you know, and whatever, which was cool. They were nice. We were, you know, friends with their families, and so we're glad they had that opportunity. But when it came time to getting close to graduation, and I'm going, okay, now how do you think friend 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, how these guys are going to do in the real world? What do you think is going? Well, if they're lucky, they're going to get a job with their mom and dad's company.
you know, if they can even keep that job, you know. And I'm going, you see what your competition is. You know, we trained you to be good parents so we can be good grandparents. We didn't want to have to take on all being parent and crap. And you know, I think all of them are doing awesome.
They're all very good adults.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, they made us good grandbabies.
Yes, they did.
And they're pretty, too.
Yeah, they're all very, very nice looking.
So I'm going, you know, this is, and they're healthy, and they're so far above it. That's another thing. They do the, you know, the development level and their weight and their height and all this other stuff. And they're always 95%+ of whatever. And I think it has a lot to do with nothing that we're so special is that they didn't give them vaccines.
Right, and they feed them good food. It's not that it doesn't come out of a box. Okay, they're feeding them organic things and not vaccinated.
Like, what's that Mylar bag? Oh, you can't have that, man. It's a bag. It's a box. It's not allowed. But at least when they come over here, even though they may not be, you know, perfectly fat, we don't get all anal about it. Like, our kids are raised on junk food. You know, we did, you know, better than most. I mean, you know, but still, it was, you know, and we were poor, so we bought a lot of staples and you made dinner, you know, instead of this, you know, heat up microwave thing. And so they don't use microwaves a lot. You know, that's why we got our convection oven is because Rhea had that. You know, I really like that. That's cool. And then some good friends of ours gave us the steaming vegetable make your own baby food fresh thing, which I thought was awesome. What a better gift that you could give. And these, you know, they were wealthy people. They could have gave them anything, you know, and they chose that. And I'm like, awesome. How awesome is that?
Yeah, they gave it to our first set of grandkids' parents, and then my daughter went and bought one when she had her baby, and she used it so much, she has to buy another one because the other one just wore out. So she plans on doing that again and cooking all their fresh food and no baby food crap.
You know, and the kids really, they learn to taste real food. They think broccoli's candy. I mean, literally. You know, they, ooh, yay, you know, I like that vegetable. And I'm going, yeah. And you should.
Well, they
Grandpa likes it too. Give me that. Oh, what is that? You know, Rhea, they came over and they made dinner last week. What was the soup she made?
Cauliflower soup.
Cauliflower soup.
Oh, no, it was really good. Was it not good?
Yeah, it was
and
good.
And everything in there was healthy.
Yeah, but it's cauliflower soup.
Did you eat it?
It's like cream of cauliflower soup.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was all right.
Okay. Oh,
but it was right. Cauliflower soup. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
well, everything in there was healthy. And
I wouldn't go over somebody's house for cauliflower soup.
Well, I get all the recipes from her because she takes the time to actually look for things and look for things that are healthy, and then she tells me about them. So then I've already got a taste tester, you know.
You know what's awesome is that she's able to... You know, I didn't even think of that. You know, of three of our kids... We have four kids. Forrest is in a relationship with a woman that has their children. How old's Mia? She's probably 8, 9.
I think they're 12, 10, and 8 or something like that.
And they're awesome kids, but they're kind of grown. And she works and, you know, at the same time, okay, Honeywell, you know, they both make a good living. So they're kind of, so she's, you know, the stay-at-home mom thing. That, and they spend time, got a good relationship with their father. They're divorced. You know, they go spend time with him and there. And these kids are awesome. So they don't really need to be at home kind of thing. But our other three kids, all of them are at home with the children, you know, and Sierra will be. So they're all got, you know, good jobs. They're doing good. And so the moms are able to stay home with the kids. How awesome is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this changes a lot. I mean, you just eliminate about a gazillion problems right there, you know. And so they make meals and they, you know, do okay. So I see such an enormous benefit and how our grandchildren, their health, how many times, we have 5 grandkids now, 6th one on the way, how many days of all the kids put together over the last life of Kaylee, which is now almost 5, how many days, kid days, counting all of them, has there been even sniffles?
There's probably been like 10 days, all of them. I mean,
total, between all of them. Yeah, I mean, it's like nothing. They're never sick.
Rarely.
You know, they kind of go, I'm sick. See? At you. Look at this. You know, I blow my nose. Look at this. Look at my booger. I'm sick. Yay! I'm sick. And, you know, they're not going, yeah, that's not sick.
Well, there's been a couple times one of them had a fever, but it wasn't for very long. I mean, they were healthy enough. They got over whatever it was pretty quickly.
They got a fever. They had a fever. And it's gone. You know, I mean, this is...
I will have to say that one of our daughter-in-law's friends... she's all in for the vaccines and, as a matter of fact, didn't even want our grandkids going over to their house unless they were vaccinated. They were like, almost ended their friendship because obviously our grandkids weren't going to be vaccinated. So it was just kind of a strange perspective for her to have, even with that. She didn't want to know the information. She's just like, nope, vaccines.
You know, that was one thing. The kids got chicken pox. And she goes, well, see, don't you wish you had them vaccinated for chicken pox? I didn't even know there was a vaccine for chicken pox.
I don't know if there is one. There probably is.
I'm sure they say there is, whether there is or not. So she goes, no, they're good. So and when we got chicken pox, we got chicken pox. I mean, it was like, damn, that boy's got some chicken pox. And these kids, they got like... It was like a day and a half of I think that's chicken pox.
Yeah, they didn't get it like a full blown thing. They got it. You knew what it was. They got over it fairly quickly with, you know, instead of taking 7 or 10 days, it might have been like 4 or 5 days.
Not even that. You know, it's just, and you know, but then Rhea, our oldest, she's like, any of the kids have a sniffle? No, we don't want them around the other kids. She might get sick, and then the other one gets sick, and I get sick, and then Tim gets sick, you know, and then we will be sick. And I'm going, it's called immune system. Get over it. You know, it's not because grandkid, I go, you know, grandma and grandpa, that's where you go to be sick. You know, so get over it. Well, she's like, now she's starting to kind of, yeah, whatever. She brings her, well, it's just it's allergies. I'm going, yeah, right. See, you guys are killing me. So this is what our life is. All of this stuff that we do, all the activism and everything, it is always top of mind with our kids. Being raised to be parents for our grandkids. And we're already starting to see, you know, the beginnings of great grandchildren that, you know, how they are they equipped and have enough self-esteem and self-confidence and skills and understanding and exposure that when they go to the government school, freaking whatever the hell going on there, that they're able to not have their psyche destroyed by some little hoodlum kid that's making them feel bad. You know, I mean, I don't want them to feel bad. And this is why I'm going, look, you got any problem? You still feel you don't want to go to school anymore? You let grandpa and grandma know. You tell mom and dad. You tell them, man, we take care of business, whatever it takes to do. Because I wanted to yank your butt out, which is what we did with our kids. But it wasn't, our kids are always, you know, popular in school at a young age. The reason we pulled them out, I think Rhea was third grade, Forrest was second, Coursera was first, and Sierra hadn't even started kindergarten yet, I don't think.
I think they all at least went to school. So it was when Sierra was in kindergarten. It was after that year.
Yeah, it was, you know, so it was, I think Forrest was in second grade, and the experience that we had, they loved Forrest because he sat in the back of the room, entertained himself, and just was quiet. Oh, he's our favorite kind of potted plant. And I'm just going, wait, he's not turning his horn. He's not doing, oh, well, that's, you know, not our main criteria. He doesn't violate anyone else's self-esteem, and he shuts up and is quiet. He's my favorite little potted plant. And I'm going, oh, so that's the criteria. Okay, we're done. I mean, right there, I just saw where this goes. They were not going to build an adult. They weren't helping in any way. I'm fighting them. We could not possibly do worse. Just stay at home for a couple. Just sit there, watch Sesame Street for all I care. We are not doing this anymore. We'll find other solutions. And then they had the School Choice Trust. You see, market on Freedom's Phoenix. They were very helpful. It was a private fundraising that all the money went to the tuition, all of it. They raised the administration of the money in a separate fund that they went out and raised separately. But all donations that went to Arizona School Choice Trust, at the time, I mean, now they're, you know, bastardized, or God knows what's going on. But, you know, but at the time, it was done by libertarians. They were libertarian Quakers. And it was started on the board of directors were libertarians that we knew that started this thing. And it became a standard for all kinds of other voucher government involved crap here in Arizona. But it was the beginning, and it was, and they were very insistent on making sure our children got on the top of that list, so when they were old enough they could go seventh grade to private school, and we had to come up with the money. I mean, we had to pay half, you know, but it was still a lot cheaper than that. And then we had another Christian tuition assistance program that they see all the people that support wanted us to do what we were doing and be successful, because I wouldn't sacrifice our children. I'm going, No, I'm going. I got to go back in corporate world. I go to manage restaurant work, do kind of business run. Kind of, I can't do this because I'm not going to, you know, subject my children to public schools. They go, oh, no, we got you taken care of, Ernie. We'll take care of you. And they really did. I mean, you know, for God, you know, over a decade and a half, they took care of the education of our children. They made sure that freed us up. Now, we still live poorly, 9.5 years in the Roach Motel, you know, but that wasn't the point. Could we have our children get a good education and come out on top that way? That was our main focus. And now the same thing with our grandchildren, because we could understand the biggest impact that we could have on our society was raising good children, you know, productive members of not draining society kind of thing, you know, with the right philosophy of leave me aloneism, and we're good. Done. Next. So where do we go? You know, I mean, you looking to be a desert farmer?
Yeah, I don't mind farming. I mean, I know it's a lot of work, but I like being outside. I'm not much of an office person, which is kind of what I'm stuck with now, but I have no problem. And I learned a lot. I mean, there's still a lot to learn, but that's kind of the name of the game. So,
well, Tonopah Rob out there, you know, he's got it going on. I don't know if he wants our competition.
Well, we're not looking to create a market, but we just...
I don't see why not. I think food is going to be freaking, you know, oh my God, there's like food.
Yeah, he's got quite the setup. But I mean, what we would be doing would be, yeah, we'd be using it as a kind of a teaching farm, which is kind of what he does. But I don't think we're going to... I don't have any aspirations of making it a big thing like he has. I mean, he's got it going on.
You know, I don't have a problem not. I mean, it'll naturally evolve. I mean, that's what he did. He's got 10 acres, and he only has probably half of that under cultivation, and it's just, you know, gone stupid. I mean, you know, he's...
Yeah, if it ends up going that way, that's one thing, but I'm not going to... That's not my goal, you know?
Well, I allow it to happen. And we go a little bit different than... He just added tilapia. He just started adding, you know, he's working with his food systems and some of the other stuff, and he's kind of...
Oh, yeah? Have you talked to him lately?
I talked to him. They did the tanks and started loading it with tilapia.
Mm-hmm, cool.
Because he, you know, we need to go out there. I think, you know, this week or, you know, next week, you and I need to drive out there and start looking at land and stuff, you know, that's still in the mix, you know, out there is an option. But the reason I'm interested in that, I'm waiting for the prices to, I think real estate's going to take a dump again. And when it, I don't want to get caught, you know, on the wrong side of that. So I'm just, I think we need to be looking and ready to pull the trigger, and it's time to cash in some silver, you know. Mm-hmm. And because that's what our silver really was for, as we accumulated the silver for when it goes stupid or land goes down or whatever that, and we don't have a whole lot, you know, but enough that we could buy us some land. You know, and then take the skills and the equipment and the stuff that we have here and go, and oh my goodness, it might have a dwelling on it, you know, which is, it has a well. Well, out there, it's like unlimited water. There's an ocean of water underneath Arizona desert. They try and tell people there's not, but there is. I mean, you know, how are we doing on water here? Are we okay?
I believe we're okay, yeah.
I mean, you know, big giant 12-inch pipes just spewing water out. How much electricity can you create to spew the water? So we live right now on 2 acres that is all grass. If we wanted it, we just kind of turned off the irrigation in one of the fields because, you know, I feel like mowing it. And so we have grass and, you know, 60, 70 foot trees. And, you know, it's just, it's really nice in the middle of the desert. And that just comes from well irrigation water. And how much do we pay to keep this place? We have a bunch of fruit trees. We have a bunch of tree trees. We got, you know, apricot, persimmon, and fig, and, you know, grapefruit, and lemon, and orange, different kinds of orange trees, and on and on and on and on. And we spend how much a month on water?
Well, the irrigation water, I mean, we pay a fee just to belong to the irrigation district. But the water itself really isn't that much. It's probably $60, $70, $80 or something.
A month.
I mean, a month for the irrigation water.
So let's look at, you're looking at, you know, for less than $1,000 a month, I mean, a year, $1,000, you live in unlimited growth with water. We get flooded twice a week, you know, like 6 inches deep. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, and desert bloom.
Chickens love it too.
Oh yeah! No, when the water starts coming in
for the chickens,
they got a water line, and all the bugs come up, and they're like ding, 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 ding.
Which is good. They wait for that. I mean, it's good for them.
Oh,
to
we
have
lost
the
three
buds.
More chickens.
Yeah, we did.
Freaking coyotes!
Well, we don't know. I talked to the guy that comes and cleans our pool, and at a block or two south of here, he said one night some people lost 16 chickens, and he said that there is a bobcat in the area. So it could have been a bobcat. I didn't see any evidence.
That sounds like a bobcat, because a bobcat go in and it just...
Very stealthy. Just
kill everything. Kinda,
yeah.
You know, that... Yeah.
Dug under the coop. They were in a coop, so it dug under the coop. I don't know if they could actually get in our coop, because it's not dug into the ground. It's,
do bobcats dig under fences?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I guess if there was a bunch of chickens there, maybe they did.
Well, we got Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah's my little doorbell. She takes care of business.
Yeah, she wants her some coyote. Until they turns around and start to get into it. I know. We'll see
I've
how
never
that
seen
goes.
That yet. She does.
She chases them down the street, though.
She will, yeah.
You know, they can get out if they want. If they really want, they can, you know, they'll squeeze under the fence and go, you know, they know they're supposed to stay in. But if they want to get out, ooh, there's some coyote with a turkey in his mouth.
And she did, too. She pushed herself under that fence to go get him. I don't know how she did it without ripping herself up, but she did.
I think she probably did. She didn't care, man. She wanted to get some. You like little Corsair said, we're going to get some.
Get some. That coyote was not having it, though. I mean, it's all about the attitude. He was... much bigger than her, but scared to death. He took off.
Nah, he just running. You know, that just means a farmer with a shotgun behind him or something.
You didn't see it. I did. He had a look of terror on his face. He's like, I gotta get out of this place, because she was...
Well, how did he get out? Did he just jump the fence?
He ran across the whole yard. Like, he was up on the northwest corner of the property, and he ran all the way down to the southeast. She chased him all through the yards and the fence, and...
Well, how did he get out?
He pushed himself under the fence over there on the other side of the yard, where we have the gate.
Right over there?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I don't think it was open over there. He didn't have much of a choice. He just ran that way.
But don't they just jump over the fence to get in or
something?
Well,
that one's a little higher down there. I think that's like 8 feet. I don't think he had time.
Okay, well, this one over here is what? Just 5, 6 feet
or something? I think it's 4 feet. It's lower than me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so they just doing over that?
Yeah, they can doing over a 6-foot fence. I don't know about 8, 10 feet. They're getting up there.
Well, you know, when you get out in the desert, we're going to be having us some coyote.
Yeah, we're going to have to deal with that.
You know, Bob's out there. That's another thing. You just, you know, shoot in his yard. You know, it's just like he's out. I mean, you're out in the desert.
Yeah.
So he's just like, he's got his little, you know, position, you know, on his deck there. And he's like, and they have rabbit. You know, there's a bunch of rabbits. So here come the coyotes. And he's like, and that one, and that one, and
yeah,
that
I don't
one.
Know how we're going to deal with that out in the desert. Here, we are chickens free range. There's a lot of stuff for them to eat here. And they, you know, they're free range. I don't know if we'll be able to have them free range as much out there.
We're going to have to do fencing. We're, you know,
definitely.
See, that's the one thing I like having. You know, I'm not big on just having a bunch of grass. We got way more grass than we need.
It is nice, though.
It's nice. But I would like to have a yard. You know, and a yard that would include for the chickens. I don't mind the chickens out there fertilizing, doing whatever. I mean, you know, if I want to, you know, lay down in it, I'll, you know, like scoot the poop around. But anyway, but the thing is, I would like to have, because the water allows for that. And but then you got to have the electricity to do it. Well, Tonopah Rob runs his entire farm, and it's only like, you know, $300 to $500 a month in electricity. I was amazed at that. Mm-hmm. I'm going, that's it? You know, for all the pumps and everything that you do? Well, he has a small home there, and he doesn't, you know, that big HVAC or pool or any of that stuff. The other thing is, would you want a pool?
Yes and no.
I mean, pool is nice in the desert. I mean, it'd make a big difference, yeah. But it's a big expense, too.
It is a big expense. I mean, I don't know if I'd want, like, a huge one, but, yeah, I mean, it's nice.
Well, they have you just dig a hole, and you drop in this big fiberglass giant pool, and just, boom, done.
We have an above-ground one still. I held on to that, so, I mean, we still have it. I know, I don't really care for that, because it's a pain to clean, but, I mean, it's an option. At least it has water, you know? I mean, I saved it because...
Hell, it's just for putting tilapia in, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, whatever you want to use it for, it's like 6,000 gallons. You know, that's substantial if you really need water storage.
When we go get the tilapia, you know, that's what they have them in, those big above-ground pools.
Yeah.
They'll have 6 or 7 of those, and it'd just be lousy with the tilapia.
Yeah, because they're cheap, and they're probably fairly functional for
what
they want to do.
They run the water, come straight out of the well... into those tanks. That's where they get the water.
Into the fish tanks?
Yeah. You know what I was thinking? You know, what if we had a pool? It was a pool, but it was just an open reservoir. I mean, we'd still have tanks like Bob. Oh, I don't know if you heard. Bob got, you know, the big tall tank. It's like 15 feet high and like, I don't know, 10 feet across or something. He's got a big tank up there. He has a tank that he got from someone. They dropped it off out there that the tank laying on its side is as high as his other tank. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big-ass tank. So he's like, you know, I got me some water storage now. Because that was the one problem that he had. He couldn't pump up enough water fast enough to supply all his fruit trees that he wanted. He just didn't have the capacity. The well wasn't, you know, didn't produce that much. And because he was higher up on the mountain, kind of, you go like, heck, even half a mile down, you know, towards the valley a little bit more, and it's like, you know, unlimited water. But he has good water. I mean, it's yummy. So
I was going to ask, how does his water, I mean, how does the wildlife react to, you said he has the aquaponic system set up and it's going like crazy out there. Do the animals get in there? Does he have the same problem as like an in-ground?
Well, he has it in
thing?
His fenced area in the backyard where his hot tub, because his hot tub is the aquaponic, you know, is the fish tank now. So he kind of has it, you know, kind of cordoned off. But he goes, yeah, he's got a, you know, he's got a, it's starting to become a thing, you know. And so he's thinking, he's going, you know, I could triple. I just need more. And he has to change the design. He was just testing it with a few beds. And he goes, damn. I mean, you saw the stuff he brought over.
Yeah, it was giant stuff.
I mean, I thought he had, it was like, you know, you get the plastic grocery bags that you get. He had in there, oh, I brought over some lettuce. Well, I thought he had like 3-4 heads. It was one head of lettuce.
Yeah.
It was just, I'm going, holy crap, I never even knew they got that big.
Mutant lettuce.
Yeah, mutant.
No, but it was real. It was fed by real, you know, nutrified water, you know.
Mutant. So anyway, yeah. So he's a big fan of the aquaponics now. And I think we got this thing dialed in. I can see what the capacity of this thing is and that we could do it in such a way that it doesn't take a lot of effort. That was my big thing. Because when we had the garden over here before, I am so sick of how much weeds I had to pull out and do it. I'm like, hell no. Homie don't want to play that game. So now we're got, it's a whole different system. You know, this is, you know, weeds is not a problem. I mean, I don't know. Have we even dealt with weeds? I don't think we deal with weeds.
Not really. No,
we deal with more pruning and overgrowth than we do anything else.
Right. There may have been one or two things that have that blew into the grow beds, but I mean, you can recognize them as a weed and pull them out. They don't like reproduce all over the place.
And you don't have to bend over.
No, and you know it's I'm not going to say it's maintenance free, but it's just it's more, you know, maintenance than it is actual work. You know, once you get it set up, there is work in setting it up. But once you get everything, then you're just kind of going out there and checking.
Make sure the pump's on.
Yeah, making sure the pump's on, making sure your fish get fed, and, you know, making sure that everything, you
know,
whatever.
Two is one is none.
Yeah.
We got to back up on everything.
But no weeding. Unless you're going to put stuff in the ground. We did put things in the ground, and we did have to deal with that issue, but, you know.
Yeah, there was we tested a lot of things, and I tell you, the one thing is, no matter what we're doing, we're having chickens. I mean, just freaking.
Hopefully, we'll never be without chickens.
Yeah, that's just stupid if you don't have chickens. That was just amazing. I mean, we never have enough eggs. I mean, you just doubled up, and we got, you know, like 2 dozen chickens now, and they're going to start laying.
I think they already have. Some of them have because they're small. The babies lay, like when they first start to lay, their eggs are a little smaller, and then they just get to the normal size. And so I've seen some small eggs, but yeah, they haven't.
How old are they now?
5 months. They were born March 10th, so they're about 5 months. They'll start when they're 6 months is when they really start growing, which will be nice because then it'll be cooler and everything right before they go into molting and the
And how many eggs we're getting a day now? About a dozen.
Well, maybe not quite that much because it is really hot for them, so they're a little bit hampered by that. But I don't know, maybe eight.
Yeah.
Some days I go out there and there's 15 eggs, and some days I go out and there's 8 or 6. So it just depends. They might be doing like every 2 days or every day and a half, so they kind of sink at some time.
Well, when the younger one, which is good, they're coming on because the other ones, some of them may be older. I mean, they may be 4 or 5 years old by now.
Yeah, I think they're all laying at this point because they're all fair. I mean, they're all within range.
Well,
but
I don't know,
some
of them, we got to segregate them out and see who's soup.
Yeah, if I cared, I just don't worry about it. I thought about, you know, it's a lot of work to do that with each chicken when you've got 20, 30
chickens.
Somebody's
got to be bait for the coyotes so I can.
No, I don't. I'm not doing that.
I say, you look kind of slow. We put you over here, and then we'll sit up there in that playhouse, hide, and then we're going to get some.
Yeah.
Get me a coyote.
But I think we're probably going to get more in the fall. It just seems like 25 isn't enough. And if you lose a few more, then you're down to like 20. And it just doesn't seem doesn't seem like enough now. For
you started off with what, like 8 or something like that?
I started off with a dozen the very first time that I got chickens. I got a dozen.
Yeah, but then some of them were roosters.
Three of them were roosters, which I was able to give back to the feed store, and they could use them for somebody else. And the three died from the heat until I figured out exactly how to deal with this heat thing in Arizona. And now they're fine. I mean, occasionally now I just go out and one will be dead and it's not from a coyote or anything. Sometimes they just die for no reason. I don't know. They just get sick.
They die for some reason.
I know they die.
Stop breathing.
But yeah, they do. But I mean, they look, there's no trauma. There's no
you
nothing.
Know what?
They're not famished. You know, they're not skinny. They're not, I have no idea sometimes why they die. But sometimes you just go out and you'll find one dead.
You know, our chickens are the healthiest looking chickens I ever saw year round. Mm-hmm. See, most of them, they kind of molt or they look kind of raggedy or they kind of... Ours, I mean, these are beautiful chickens all the time. There's no time I ever felt embarrassed going out and showing my chickens, you know? And some of them are very beautiful. And one of them was my favorite. And Ross had his dog out here. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry, man, you got one of the chickens. That's all right. You know, they're chickens. Unless it was that one. Well, I think that's the one that got.
Was it?
I go, you some bitch. You know, that was my favorite chicken. So from then on, I didn't even know him. Don't care. It was just like, that black one, you know. The white one. And it was, so I don't get attached anymore. It was just a beautiful chicken, a multicolored. It was just really gorgeous chicken. And I'm just, you know, so I don't care anymore. Don't get attached. Screw them.
Well,
moving targets.
Yeah. Well, I like all my chickens. I mean, they all have, certain ones have their own personalities, like those two white ones we have back there, the Americanas. They have different personality. None of them are aggressive, but those seem to be more loner, you know.
I tell you, types. One thing I noticed a lot was the turkeys.
Yeah, we really like the turkey. I don't want to talk about the turkeys.
Totally different. You know, turkey, I can see where turkeys are kind of, you know, farm pets, you know. Mm-hmm. Like Tonopah Rob, he's definitely got his buddy turkeys, you know.
I didn't understand that till I had turkeys. They're very endearing. They're very nice.
And the kids
animals.
Like them
the kids
and everything.
Like them.
And, mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, we made the commitment. We're like, well, Thanksgiving be a coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we harvested them.
Hey, we did. I mean, that's what we're about. So we just did it. But sometimes you got to suffer that loss. But we learned.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not a big giant fan of doing. Yeah, you know, it's good to know. I mean, it's kind of, you know, when after you get to, you know, 200-300, you know, chickens, you kind of go, you know, some of you guys are going to be din. But, you know, that's what the tilapia is for. I don't have as much emotional attachment to the fish because I don't think they really have a memory past, you know, last time they got fed anyway. But they did learn. They know when they see our shadow across and they're like, hey, here comes the food gods. I mean, you know, kind of, you know, manna from heaven, you know, somebody sprinkling something on. But we don't really have to feed them that much. I mean, they go to town on the algae. You know?
Yeah, there's enough in there they could eat. But yeah, you do twice a day. Don't have to throw that much, but they do need to eat.
How do you know?
Because when you don't, you see that when at some point, I know me and Gina were kind of keeping an eye on how much we were feeding them, and we noticed that, they really weren't growing that much. So, I mean, there was plenty of algae in there, but I don't know. I think they got used to having the food a little bit. But when we started feeding them more food, like maybe three times a day instead of twice and a little bit more, because, I mean, we have a lot of fish in there. They started growing more.
Oh, yeah. No. They'll grow more. I'm just like, well, that's not necessarily I just need them to grow. I just need them to poop.
No, mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't think that they were really growing at all was my point. And
well,
so,
during the colder weather, so. I don't think they do. But that's another thing. We got to get that, you know, dish done. And see, that's the thing. When we move out there, you know, we start doing this a lot. We got to take out there. And I need structures. You know, we just need space. We need space under shade. We need space under, you know, doesn't get wet. We need space, you know, maybe even insulated. We need space to put stuff that doesn't get blown apart and messed up and dust and dirt and kind of an animal and eaten and kind of space. And I'm going, how do we do that? Domes.
I like to see how waterproof they are.
No, you just go to Phoenix Tent and Awning and tell them to make it. I mean, hell, I can make it. You give me the stuff. I sewed it. I can do it. It's like work, you know. That's another thing. We haven't even emphasized this yet. This week, our Sun Corsair, you know, having machinist, you know, has work, design, and do this die for the blah, blah, blah. And what we're doing is we went and bought a stamp press. And normally these things could be $10,000, $20,000. I got a smaller old 5-ton World War II stamped out freaking God knows what back in the day.
And it worked. They were selling it as like an antique. Well, I knew a friend of mine, or a guy I know, he got a old late 1800s stamp press for doing coins. And it was an original, the actual U.S. Mint used it, got it refurbed and was using it, making these commemorative coins. And the man came in and go, oh, we want to buy that. You're not allowed to get it. Yeah, and bite me. And they go, oh, you're not letting, you know, they didn't want him to have it. And he's like, nope, mine. And so I can see why they don't want you to have it. They're afraid you're going to start minting your own money, I guess, or something. I don't know. It's like Silver Circle kind of thing. But this stamp press, in World War II, they used it for Lord knows what, but it still worked. Well, they were selling it kind of as, it's just an antique, because they didn't want to have any liability, because it has like spinning parts and doesn't have a lot of safeguard kind of stuff, you know. So, yeah, you don't want to be messed around. It's not something you want the kids working on. But it's a good test for us squishing the ends on making the pieces for the Aquadome. And what happened is they're so labor intensive if you're doing everything by hand. And we do it really well and do it good. But they want Endless Food Systems wants to have a demonstration model at the Prepper Fest in November, and the Aquadome is popular. I mean, it's people are spending $1,500 for these greenhouses that suck and they blow away and they're not as strong. And we've had some freaking storms here, and the domes don't even notice. I mean, it's just their shape or whatever.
Very sturdy. I don't know. It's just the engineering of it all.
Yeah, they're like, and I sneeze at you.
And nothing inside is messed up either.
Yeah, no, I love these domes. I mean, they're freaking awesome. So I'm going, okay, well, I'll go ahead, but I don't want to, because what's my biggest fear? Somebody will want one. Then I got to make it.
You got to make it.
You know, I can't possibly charge enough money. It's a lot of labor intensive. So if I said, if I can get the machinery to get it down to where we could have one person do three domes a day. And when you get down to that, well, then it's, you know, head down plow. We'd be dome making people. So that's what we're doing. As we're setting that up, that's one of the projects that we're working on. So to do that, I move out in Lone Prairie of, you know, I don't have this steel barn. You know, I don't have this, you know, area here. I don't have the garage. Well, maybe I do. It depends what's out there. But, you know, we get some cheap land and everything. We're going to have to, I need concrete slab, put up big 30-foot dome, shall build whatever the heck I want, live in a single wide, and kind of, you know, we go from there. And we just start building out. You know, but what do you have to have? We have to have electrical power and water. I mean, that is the A number one, because I don't want to be too hot. I don't want to be too cold. I don't want to be too hungry. I don't want to be too thirsty. I don't want to be too windy. I don't want to be too unsexed. I don't want to be too something, you know. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
I'd throw that in there, didn't
you? Damn Skippy. You always got to, you know.
Did I say that out loud?
Priorities. But the, I'm looking forward to this, but it's, but I need to know that you're in. Are you in?
I'm always in. Yeah.
All right. So we've been looking. And, it's a big grandkid thing. But I tell you, the other thing is that it's just water. Do we have access to water? Lots and lots of water. Well, out there we do. So I'm going, okay, and it's not too far away. You know, it's within an hour of our kids, you know, doing, it's not even that long, really, probably 40 minutes, especially from, Corsair and the kids. They're
the freeway. Yeah, it's just the freeway. So
yeah, so how long do you think it'd take to get out there?
It takes 60 minutes from our front door, but, I mean, it takes us a while just to get to the freeway. It's 20 miles down the freeway and then another whatever hour.
So they may be a half hour away. It won't be that much further than them coming here.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy deal.
Okay, so that, it's not that bad. Now, mm-hmm. The other thing was over the years, we were worried about communications. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have, you know, it's like, they didn't have internet up in, you know, Rye or Gaisela or Young or, I mean, that wasn't even an option. Well, now that's changing. You know, that's why we've been keeping track of this. It opens up the world. Now, solar is getting way cheaper. It's much more effective. Storage is starting to get better. You know, the battery project is still going just to, you know, because we can. And so there's a lot of things, but we need to get our life pared down. We're not as busy. We need to cut our overhead tremendously. We are way fat overhead on all this stuff. So we need to really cut back on, you know, stuff so we can get our nuts smaller. You know, I mean, that's like a big thing. We have our own fundraiser we're going to have to do. And we might do that. And we might do some kind of stuff. But we got to see what's the offering to everybody.
Yeah, you know, we've never actually done that. We've never done that before. In all these years.
Yeah, but we've built a lot of relationships. You know, we've helped a lot of people. And will it be our turn? Yeah, because whenever we needed it, you know, there's been an injury or I got burned or we have, you know, some project or something, you know, the people that want, you know, the people come out. I mean, they, you know, we've always been, you know, there's always some time when we needed it, something, you know, boom, there it is. So I'm not afraid to ask. It's just, you know, for what? You know, we got to be very specific about what it is that we're trying to accomplish and that people want that to be accomplished. So we got to come up with that plan. And that's why I knew how popular it was going to be with your first egg. You know, I mean, do you remember that?
I do remember that. Would you like me to tell the story?
Well, just real quick, just tell the story.
When we first got our chickens, they were about 4 or 5 months old, and I noticed that one of them had laid an egg, and I thought, oh, well, that's really cool. And Ernie said, well, make a story out of it. And I thought, nobody is going to want to see that. This is like a waste of time. So anyway, after Ernie's insistence, I wrote an article, put the picture of the egg in Freedom's Phoenix, and then, lo and behold, it ended up being one of the most popular stories ever. So
I mean, it just okay. Went stupid.
I'm like, okay.
You know, because keep in mind, back then, you know, chickens was not like a big deal.
Yeah, it was 2009. People were still kind of sort of working
chicken?
On it.
Chicken? What's that? Ew, chicken. You know, because I'm not a big bird fan. I just don't like grabbing, touching, kind of, ew. You know, it's just
you can get used to that, too.
Yeah, and I force myself to kind of, and they're kind of cool. I mean, you know, I really like chickens.
I do too.
They don't piss me off. I mean, you know, as long as I keep them out of this part of the yard, so I don't have to walk in their poop all the time or something. But you know, they stay in the other part of their yard, and I, you know, the pool area, they're not allowed unless we get a bunch of bugs.
Yeah, we leave them in there sometimes.
Yeah, because here comes the bugs. Yeah, hey, a little too many scorpions. Where's my chickens? Kind of when you get mad, I just go, they're over there. Go get them. Boom, done. Mm-hmm. they take care of business. So this is what we're thinking, all the stuff that we're doing and helping people and behind the scenes of getting Freedom's Phoenix ready for the next wave of the just communication. It's not so much political activism. That's a side effect of a cultural thing. And we want to make sure that we're in a situation to where we're able to inspire and help and using our family as an example. And we're open with our lives because we know it's in our best interest. Because there's a future that I really, I'm excited about. The technology and stuff that's coming, it's just more and more we're removing ourselves from dependence on some kind of system or grid. And the entire system is always doing this. We just want everybody to know why they need us. And if they don't know it, we'll like create a reason, a pandemic, a mushroom cloud or something. And I feel it. And if they can't get it, they'll manufacture it. So I think it's getting to the point to where it's time. I just, you know, I don't mind, you know, being near a big city. I want to be able to go to the movies and have the benefits of, but I just want to be not on the front row, but I also want to be in a community of people that we have friends, close friends that are out doing this already, kind of blazed a trail and perfected a lot of the mechanisms, and they're very smart and very helpful. And that's why we did Tonopah Rob and, you know, Shea Bob out there, you know, Bob Anderson's been, you know, 12 years totally off grid. I mean, totally, you know, water, septic, communication, television, satellite, internet, water, everything, you know, solar, wind, backup. I mean, that, you know, the boy's got skills. So I am feeling really good about what can be done. And we've perfected a lot of other technology that he's embraced. You know, the aquaponics thing, he's like, holy crap. I had to go, yeah. And he's got it going. And he's a busy guy. I mean, he doesn't have time to be jerking around with all this stuff. So he's demonstrated how well you can live out there. Because he's like 2,600 square foot home. He's got a, you know, extra, you know, like a studio garage that's, you know, really a home, you know, for his son. And he has nice facility out there, and, you know, sea container kind of garage thing between doing generator, house, power, substation. He own created his own whatever the hell. And solar has gotten so cheap, that has made the big difference. And then, of course, he did the nickel iron batteries that they last a few more years. Then they've outlived and do a lot better than the lead acid. And then that's why we're, you know, working on the stuff that we're doing. So I'm going, this is very possible, and Donna and I are of good health. We're just over 50. So, you know, can we do this? And then, of course, we bring up our grandchildren in, you know, understanding what can be done. So we'll share this with you. I think it's going to be popular. I think people are going to want to know how and what we're doing. We don't spend enough time on all the day-to-day that we're doing because we're kind of perfecting it. And I go, and it's a lot of time. I don't have time like some of these guys. That's all they do is, you know, how to build the bee, whatever, in our farm or that kind of. I mean, we do a lot of stuff. So, but we have the media technology here to do it, and that's what Dean's here for. So Gina helps with a lot of stuff. Dean's, we're trying to overlap a lot of staff and cut down on our costs and everything, but we want to be able to share with you, and there will be a time where we'll ask for donations. Now, we always have the option you can donate, but we're going to make a big fundraising kind of here we go thing because I can see the power and the inspiration of what we're doing. Because that's why I wanted to do this, was to demonstrate that we don't have to be constantly filled with anxiety about where our food's coming from, that we're too hot, too cold, too uncomfortable, too something, that we're always having to pay to the man or something. And then you get into the leave me alone zone. And that's when we'll probably emphasize that domain. Because we got it, I don't know, a year or more ago. Leavemealonezone.com. Because that's all I really want. So any advocacy I would do with government here or the people that we know politically, I'm just going to go, look, I'm just setting an example. I just want, can I be left alone? Leave me alone zone. Are you guys just using government bureaucracy just to screw with us? Now, of course, we'll try to do it through the trust and then have my name on whatever and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I don't want to get involved. The only time is when they start messing with you, that what is your defense? Well, what we do and as activists, I mean, if you really want to mess with this, if you really want to play, all right, we're going to get some. We're going to get some. Because we can subdivide it and change it out and make part of it a different land that's next to where we're living. Kind of, I mean, we'll play, you know, with how we're doing this. And we've been dealing with real estate. In fact, the Breakfast Club coming up September 6th is going to be on this very point, on how do you take possession of land. Donna is real estate. You know, Keith, McAnarchist, you know, he does a lot of this stuff. And the Baca Meadow, where we have the Jackalope Freedom Festival, we started doing some, you know, research on that, and we found this totally off the books. It was a homesteaded property by a family in the late 1800s that kind of got somehow assimilated into the government kind of dinner, just kind of, shh, don't tell anybody. It's secret. So we're going to find out the secrets of what the deal and the trust deal with that was and the condition that you kind of, that they try and do anything with this camping. We start doing some research on it. They start giving us hassle last year. We start finding out stuff. And they're like, damn it. Got to leave them damn libertarians alone. So hopefully, you know, we'll just have the, you know, look. If you'll just leave us alone, leave us alone zone, then we won't have to engage. But, you know, we'll see. And we'll share that with you because we're going in the next phase of this. We're going to take all the knowledge that we have, all the things that we've done, all of the production of energy and food and, you know, our health and all this kind of stuff. We're going to try and demonstrate. We're not going to be isolated. We're not going to, you know, make, you know, our goal isn't to totally be off the system because I like going to the movies. But, you know, we're trying, you know, trade a lot of what we have for more peace of mind because that's what I... You know, I promised Donna when we first got married, as I said, it won't, or what did I say? What wouldn't it be?
Won't be boring.
It won't be boring. Well, now I'm trying to, you know, I'm going to promise her it can be a little bit boring.
Shibumi.
You know, I'm glad you remember that word. I forgot all about the.
Forgot that word?
No, but I forgot you knew. Shibumi was a book that I read by an author named Trevanian. It was, you know, a spy thing, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. But the concept and the reason it was called Shibumi is that the highest goal, his attainment was Shibumi, which is a Japanese word that basically means peace of mind. It's just home Shibumi, you know. And the first corporation that we opened when we did our first business is we incorporated under Shibumi. And the reason, because that was our focus, just to have peace of mind. Well, what got in the way? There's all this government permission slip and control, and then we start our own business, and you do your first income tax, and you find out who you were really working for. And I go, oh, and I got to pay both sides of Social Security. Seriously? I'm like, oh, my God. You know, this is hell no. So I go, we're not going to get it anyway. It's certainly not worth anything. So I'm just going, no, I'm just looking for the peace of mind. But we had to go through this activist stage in order to get to the point to where, you know, we at least had an understanding and we put our finger on the, and it, not just us. There, fortunately, we found other people like us, but we really felt that we were the only ones for a long time. You know, a long time. I mean, you know, was there a bunch of other people out there that had this kind of distributed, nobody in charge mentality for years?
Ron Paul?
Yeah. Well, he's still kind of.
Yeah, I know. He was still in the government. Political. But, I mean, there were, but they weren't really. I mean, everybody back then was, you know, they were busy making money and buying bigger houses and bigger cars and going into debt and doing all those things. And we always were about something different.
Yeah, and then when it hit in 08, and all our people, you know, the friends, you know, they're like, you know, kids are just starting to graduate high school and wanting to go to college and all that, they were devastated. I mean, all our friends that thought they were, you know, they're in the system and the man, they did, and they were just, and we, and I didn't get any, I told you so, I felt really bad. I felt sad for them, because we tried to warn them, you know, we were telling them, in fact, I wrote the article, The Greatest Depression. It was really for my friends, you know, in July of 08, you know, months before the bottom dropped out. And I'm just going, in 07, we're doing our radio shows, and Charles and I, we're just making a big, we're going, look, here it comes. Now, some people did, like Frank Gillespie, I think, what was his name?
Golubsky.
Yeah, Golubsky. You know, Frank and Jack Gregson. You know, Jack, I got to call now because he's dumping all over Rand on the site. I mean, he's just really, you know, like Rand Paul in diapers. And like, I keep changing. I go, look, man, let's not do the ad hominem thing. Quit making fun of his, you know, like toupee or some crap. I go, seriously, we go a little higher level than that. And he's like, no, I can't believe it. We got to go. He's all mad that, you know, the Paul dynasty has still kept people in the system. You know, that's just pissing him off that they need to know better and that shouldn't be. And I'm, all right, no, I understand your perspective, but let's, you know, kind of keep it a little higher. So I still got to talk to him today. But I don't like the negative waves. And I was really appreciative of Dr. Paul and what he did as a stepping stone to, you know, a much wider awareness. And I think he starts to see that, yeah, there's not, yeah, there's a lot more for the voluntarist anarchist kind of thing, then I don't think we're going to fix it on the inside. I think any benefit or legitimacy of government is just going to be a side effect of leave me aloneism. You know, just I don't see a systemic cure. You know, the system is the problem. You know, so as long as I think that's what Dr. Paul really did, and that's what I anticipated was going to, that's why I knew not to get involved. And a lot of people in my position without the experience, they would have jumped all over the offer to be part of their thing. And I think they were surprised that I didn't take advantage of that several times. I mean, and you go and get behind the scene meeting of, can't we just, and you can be part of, and I'm like, nah, I already know where this goes. And they thought it was like a personal slight. I mean, no, it's, I appreciate everything. I'm loyal opposition. I just want you to understand. No, I already know. I know it. We knew what was going to happen. We did. That's what we did our summits on. We had, you know, a lot of understanding, and we just knew that it was going to be a cultural thing, and not, it's a revolution, not voting. It doesn't say Republican revolution, you know. And it wasn't even Ron Paul's revolution. It was like the revolution endorsement of Ron Paul, and it was, you know, I'm glad to see where, how it's branched out and everything, but. You can, I try and emphasize on the show a lot. The only connection that we have to these young people and everything is just that we understand from being them decades ago what they're looking for. Just don't lie to me. You know, the truth. We'll navigate and do what. So what's the truth? Once you, how do you unlearn the truth? So that's what we try and do. And the next phase of this is living it, doing it, example, and living a quality life. What gets in the way? Taxes, property taxes. It's like a family farm. You know, they come in and they just tax the crap out of you to where you can't just do sustenance. You know, you have to have surplus just to pay the taxes, you know, and then it just, you know, it turns into the hamster wheel. And then you got mom working at the McDonald's to be able to pay, you know, the other part of the taxes, the increase of the taxes for the healthcare taxes. I mean, you know, it's just so I can, I see what's happened. We're trying to be an example to this and survive it. Because I don't think there's an appreciation for how simple it can be and how it used to be. And I think that the government is just going to fall. I think it's just going to start imploding, and they're doing it already. You know, how much money can they make just because they stop you because they got a shiny badge and you owe us money. And it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and it's really creating this big them versus us. And that was why I was really encouraged by Larkin Rose's presentation at the Jackalope, where he was talking about, you know, the cops are victims too. We need to start kind of, and that's something we may do with Cop Block. I might encourage them to try and, you know, see if we can, you know, work something out to where we can be an offering, because we've done it before with the support first responders that refused, you know, mandatory vaccination. We made a big deal out of that, and that was two cops and policemen. And, you know, healthcare workers, but mainly it was to the police and the firemen. And we targeted first all the police stations with those signs. And we're saying, look, man, we're supporting you. You say no. Say hell no. And that just kind of went away when the firemen started just returning them. They just said, you know, the entire cities, they said, we're not doing it. We're not doing it. Because they could see they had support from the people. If we demonstrate that, I think we might get more than you think. And I know these guys and talk to them, but they're the fusion center thing. They're getting orders from high on from the money of the bad guys and kind of ew. So we'll see what happens with Sheriff Mack doing the Navajo County thing. That might have some impact. So there's a reason to our madness. And we're setting up the site to be able to empower individual activists more. And we'll do a fundraising thing when we get done the way, you know, that, because there's so many services and features on Freedom City you don't even know about. That we, you know, the custom module for our subscribers, that it's just really empowering. But we don't emphasize that because we're not done yet. And we've had so much coding that's gone in, and we're cleaning it all up. That's being done for the last couple of months behind the scenes now. When we launch this and we get everything all the way, when I'm ready, and we, you know, do this, hopefully we'll get that done quickly so we can launch the newspaper. Because the newspaper is going to be interactive, QR code, kind of, you know, your smart device, and you're sitting there reading kind of interactive empowerment of kind of, you know, I already know where this goes. And I know a lot of people, they don't see it. Nah, I don't care. And I just, you'll see when I want you to see, and we're ready to see it, and you'll see. You know, so we'll go ahead and do that. But the thing is that there's a reason for our madness. It's because we see the future way down. We're planning for great grandkids now. What kind of world are they going to live in? What kind of world do you want to live in? Do you just, and I don't even care, as long as you allow me to live in the world that I want. That was the promise, is that I get to do what I want as long as I'm not bothering you. And I'm out in the freaking desert? Seriously? In the desert? How does that bother you? I don't know, they'll think of a way, but, you know, it's, but that's what we're doing. So I think, Donna, for our next, you know, it's 30 years we've been married, and it has not been boring.
No, it has not been boring.
And we've been productive. We've accomplished a lot of things.
We're busy people.
You know, so, and I just want, I think the next phase is we take a lot of this stuff and we start to show the development up. And that's why we wanted to create, you know, a lot of the things that we do. And I want to be able to put up videos that I know is never going to go away, because we've gone through that. You know, YouTube wants to, you know, limit what we can do. Blip TV started, you know, it's taken a lot of stuff off before. Vimeo is probably going to do it sooner or later in the future. We have all the stuff on our hard drive. So when it's time and the maids say, we just put it out on the, you know, on the network, and it's done. It's over. We got it all ready to load. We had 300 gigs of stuff, you know, from the site, the disk, and we're setting up. I've been waiting on this. Never take down isms. If you look on the newsletter archives that we have, just by looking at the archive day by day by day, you can see the progression of the state, you know, and the battle. You can see it just in the kind of stories that we put up day by day by day. You just see it in certain categories. You can see it. You can see it. There, one last thing. I just saw a graphic come up rotating on my other computer over there. It was a taste of Armageddon. It was an episode in Star Trek where the two planets warred with each other and they just fought it with computers. There are no actual real bombs or anything. It's just that you're expected to go step into, oh, well, you've been attacked by and got through and the computer says and tabulated and go get in the disintegrator and you're dead now. And I'm like, what? So that was, nope, got to have real war, that evilness of war. And then this, you know, pretend little sanitized, you don't get the real pictures of little kids blown apart war, you know, it's going to have this kind of, you know, like TV war. And that was a good episode, and it was it really had an impact on me as a kid. And now they're coming out with accusations that this Iron Dome thing in Israel is all fake. It's just a hoax. They just, you know, send up some missiles and go bang. Yeah, we stopped you and saved you from rocket and did the siren and, you know, we love you. And they're going, this is all BS. It's just all for show. It's just fireworks. And I go, I remember this. This was a Star Trek episode that was called A Taste of Armageddon. So we put that up over the weekend. You know, that, and I'm like, look, see, we're just being socially and economically and, you know, psychologically, we're just being engineered. So I just turn off the TV. We're just not, you don't even have our eyeballs anymore. You know, turn off the Facebook. I mean, turn off the, you know, we're just done. We're just going to communicate with each other and the things that we find of interest the way the internet used to be. So I can see all this coming. And I know a lot of people don't see it. They don't understand it. They don't understand how important it is, or they're starting to. And we just have to demonstrate it. So that's what we're going to try and do. And you see the covers of our magazines all depict this kind of stuff. That's, each one of those magazines, they're out there now, 36 editions, 3 full years of just the things that we thought were important, the things that we wanted to emphasize, the things that would demonstrate what can be done, you know, the new technology, the philosophy, you know, and I'm very hopeful, so much so that I'm willing to bet the rest of my life on it. Do we leave? Do we go seasteading? Do we go, we might. You know, you never know what's in the future. But I can't imagine us not being a part of our grandchildren's lives. And I used to think it was a selfish thing because I wanted it. And I did, and I enjoy my grandchildren and everything. But, you know, we start to see what an impact, positive impact we have on their lives. So which grandchild doesn't get that kind of attention? Do we stop now? We got the first couple that are old enough, they're 4 or 5, you know, and they're kind of, we're good, and the rest of them, you know, they don't get it. You know, do we deny our grandchildren, you know, our input as they become teenagers and young adults? Are we going, you know, send me a letter, we'll Skype every now and then? Do we do that? Or do we maintain part of their lives all because that's kind of our responsibility? To everybody, not just them or us, to everybody. That was our plan from the beginning. So this is just the next phase of that. So we're going to be, we have a lot of stuff. It's how we pare it down to what needs to be what. I don't know. We're working on it. But I want to thank everybody for all the support that they've given us and demonstrated and showed us. And, you know, just an appreciation of what we're doing. And there's going to be a whole new wave of this in another part of Ernie and Donna's life. And we're going to take you with us. But there's a reason why we do this. It's because we know that we are best served and that we get the freedom that we desire when we advocate it for everyone. There's no other way. What do you want to say goodbye, Donna?
Goodbye. I'm not much of a talker like you, but
obviously.
Well, I mean, I do appreciate all the support we've had over the years, and people are very gracious. Sometimes I kind of wonder why, but I guess when you put your head down and plow, you don't really see everything that you've done. So, and but they do. So,
yeah,
a lot of people are surprised at all the things that we've done, and I don't know. Just, I appreciate
it.
Well,
as time goes on, they're like, yeah, we don't want to hear about, you know, Levolution stuff anymore. We don't care. Yeah, whatever. You know, the reason I bring that up is because it's just one of 15 gazillion different projects. It's just the most, you know, widely iconic, you know, known. But the reason I do that, because we didn't really have any, that's not the point. The point that I want to make is that it gave me a view into the mind of Generation Next. And I understood it because that's what we were. We were waiting for this opportunity to express ourselves, and we didn't have it before. We didn't have the internet the way it is. We didn't have video. We didn't have and all the tools at the disposal of Generation Next now. That is just a choke point that those are going to go after. You're so not allowed. You're targeted. You know, there's a lot of stories today. You have Hollywood comes out and says, you know, we don't like foreign policy of whatever it is. And they're starting to do the blacklist thing again because they can. You know, we have, you know, Murdoch trying to buy Time Warner, CNN to add to their Fox and all this other stuff. So what does Jon Stewart do? It is a fake Kickstarter. We're going to buy CNN. Yeah, don't laugh. All of a sudden people go, okay, we bought it. Now what do we do with it? Man, I don't care. You know, it's not Next. It's internet anyway. So they're losing eyeballs. They're losing ears. They're losing control. They're losing. You know, there's no, we don't need to take it over. We just need to ignore it. And we have to demonstrate that you can and how. So that's what we're going to be doing. And I keep saying this. You just don't want to be too hot, too cold, too hungry, too thirsty, too unoccupied, to whatever. You just want to be able to live a comfortable life. If you can do that in comfort, you wake up in the morning, you get to have, you know, your favorite morning beverage of whatever, you can, you know, do your work, you survived, you go to bed without worry, you didn't have to, so you had hard work, you know, the life of, and without stress, or you didn't harm anybody, or nobody was harming you, you don't have this bad, evil kind of darkness over your, you know, worry. You know, this angst, you know, if you can eliminate that in your life, wow. Wow. I mean, has that not been our goal? Shaboomy. Peace
yep.
of mind.
Yep.
From the beginning. So that's what we've been striving towards, because now we're getting of the age. We're in good health now. I probably feel better now than I did at 35, you know, because of the way we're eating. But, you know, we need to get in better shape and all that kind of stuff. But we're doing pretty good. And now is the time to take advantage of all this experience and start to use it. And we'll hope that you'll go along for the ride.